in terms of the Children's Act, the child can consent, which is he or she is older than 16 years, then he does it. And so that's something I think going forward we would, you know, we would have to look at. Thanks, Chair.
So on that point, you see.
Thank you very much, Chair. My question was that educators that commit unwanted acts, that they be listed and registered in this offences register. What I want to know is, what is the determination by the Department of unwanted acts? What is an unwanted act? And I just say, does this suggest that DBE would say consensual sex is acceptable? I want to know what the unwanted acts are.
Let me also take you another question. On the point that you have mentioned that if committed in your school, that means that this teacher with the new legislation has the right to have a relationship or an unwanted another child at another school, according to what about if it's under, the child is under in that school? Because I know a kid where a teacher was not had a relation with the child at this school, and because he was facing this case, the case disappeared because he went to another school.
You know, I understand even the noise. People are hungry.
Yeah.
That's on the top of okay, for the
Chair, very little you wrap up. I left it because I thought Mr. Whittle will share the information. On Friday, the minister had convened a summit on school safety. There was a question from Honorable Boshoff, I think, as to what are we doing about what's been happening regarding school safety and so on. The minister has convened a summit on Friday with cross-stakeholder grouping to look at what has been happening, but also to come up with measures and position the sector to deal with the issue of school safety much more decisively and comprehensively.
Okay. Could I just ask the DG, will the minister also look at the fact that our teachers are now being attacked as well, because they have no mechanism for protection, because every disciplinary act has been taken away from them. It's as if their hands have been chopped off. They must just stand back and be attacked. So we've got to look at our teachers as well. They must be protected. They are looking after the future generations. So those things must also be discussed. But I still haven't received an answer on unwanted acts.
Okay, are you mentioned? Yeah, and I think when DM, as you respond to her question, also feature in this what she is raising now, to say every disciplinary act has been taken away from the teachers, because I think that is an argument, that is a discussion.
No,
the topic
it's semantics. It's semantics.
Okay. Thank you. DM?
Well, thank you very much. You said that the answer is semantics. Unwanted itself. And I think what they've done is they put it in inverted commas, but these are transgressions.
Unwanted.
So any sexual assault, sexual abuse, rape, those are all unwanted acts. And I think the question is a good question, because I think the report should indicate what is meant by unwanted, because it doesn't have any legal definition. Unwanted is something that you don't want. But it has no legal definition. I certainly agree. It should define the nature of the act that is unwanted. So it would rather be a criminal or a disciplinary offense. So, for example, if you have, even with the consent of the learner, sexual relationship with the learner, it may not be, you may not be criminally liable, but you are certainly liable in terms of the discipline, and you can be expelled. In fact, you're removed as a teacher. So it's prohibited. So rather than unwanted, I would rather say illegal or prohibited act, because it seems to be prohibited either in terms of the disciplinary code or in terms of legislation. So that's the semantics that I spoke about.
And they still may keep in education, and I should be a lawyer, right?
Can you respond to the question, please?
Well, this, and there's another advocate sitting here disagreeing with me already, Chairperson. So, I mean, rather what we'll do is to go back, get clear legal advice, and come back to you. The advice that we have currently is that it is, you know, I mean, certainly you can't have sexual relations with a child. And so if you are 16 years and older, you can consent to sex with any person, right? But if you're under 16, you can't. The child has to, the person that you're consenting to can only be 2 years older than yourself. So that's illegal statutory rape immediately. But the issue that Honorable Boshoff is raising around, well, that I was talking about earlier, that's, I think, where we have a lacuna in our legislation that we need to deal with.
Honorable
Machenzi?
I
Thank you very much. Health department, you know, we can stay with you for 2 days without a break. Yeah, I know even now I'm suffocating a lot of follow-ups, all of us, but it's still to say something, but we know that you can never be able to exhaust the net in one meeting. But let me thank you for the presentation. We've seen the progress, seen the challenges that you have been faced with. And you are always saying, as UDG was raising it, to say, they always come here and believe that in some of the challenges that you are still faced with, we are together, we always not provide solutions, but also advise, of which we always say continuously, that is what we always do, to make sure that you see this department functioning well without all these challenges that you are seeing. But really, we need to remember on the huge steps that we have taken to make sure that we give a quality education moving forward. So, we're still going to be engaging with you week in and week after. So, thank you very much for this annual report. And with what we have discussed, for me, it's we have even got into the report that we are waiting for come the end of this financial year that we are in, because there is so much progress that we have seen corresponding to the issues that have been raised the previous years. So let us adjourn this part of the meeting for now, just stretch, get lunch then. The time, we're supposed to start at 1:30. The time is quarter to 2. Can we start at 2?
Yeah.
Let's try to grab something, sit down for 15 minutes and try to get it at 2 and stay for the new. Thank you.
Yeah.
commit to that.
Yeah. from the father, it's called the core self-awareness.
Oh, maybe it's not yet 2 days. Still a minute. They will stop. But, oh, yeah, finally. Let us welcome the delegation from SAFE and Madusi. Just to warn you, we've had a long day since yesterday and this morning. But unfortunately, for us having those two long days does not mean that you are now tired and drowsy. It means that you are more sharpened. That's the warning that I want to give you, to say the engagement that we're going to be having with you will be so loudly, lively, and you could see that you will see that no, we're still alive to the discussions that you're about to have. Oh, Umadusi is chatting, I can see there, because I was not sure which entity is going to be starting between Umadusi and Faith. But we are going to be allowing them, Umadusi, to give us their presentation on their annual report for 2017-18, where we are wrapping up the financial year, to see what is it that we have achieved, looking at your performance vis-a-vis your targets and your plans. We'll take the discussion from there. When I look around the majesty, you don't need to do any introduction. The two of you are well known in our committee.
No, yeah.
Oh, okay. Okay. Thank you. Yeah. So I will just hand over to you, Chairperson Professor Walmick, and lead us with your presentation so that you can take the engagement.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Honourable members of the Portfolio Committee, we always appreciate the opportunity to engage with the Portfolio Committee and today to present the annual report for the 2017-2018 financial year. The CEO and his team will give a detailed presentation in a few minutes on the developments during the period under review, but from my side I would just briefly like to highlight a few things. The first one is that I'd like to bring to the attention of the Portfolio Committee that a new Umadusi Council has been appointed by the Minister of Basic Education on the 8th of June 2018, and they will serve a 4-year term which will end in June 2022. I have no doubt that the new council will build on the sterling work of the previous council and take the work of the organization to greater heights. As we all know, the role of Umadusi is to the council is to discharge its fiduciary duty in relation to the organizational performance, governance and financial management of Umadusi. And I'm very pleased to report, Chairperson, that in this regard, Umadusi has worked very hard, extremely hard this year in meeting its legislative, governance and financial mandate. And I say that because failure to achieve our goals in these three critical areas would have made it impossible for the Council of Umadusi to discharge its fiduciary duty as commissioned by the Honourable Minister of Education. So I'm delighted to report that Umadusi has once again obtained an unqualified audit report for the financial year under review, and this way Umadusi continues to be a reliable quality assurance body for basic education in this country. And that's it, Chairperson. Council will work very hard in collaboration with management to ensure that maybe next time we reach our target of a clean audit. I will now hand over to Dr. Rakamesh to continue with the presentation.
Thank you very much, Professor Volmink, Honourable Chairperson, Honourable members of the Portfolio Committee on Basic Education, and colleagues. The presentation that Umar should be doing will be focusing on the following. I'll be giving a little bit of background, and then we'll do the audit report. Part A will be performance information. Part B will deal with human resources, and Part C, it will be financial measures. I'll be sharing the presentation with two colleagues, Mr. Lamusimeghi doing performance information and Major Komin Rousseau will be doing financial report. Now, as a background, we are a quality council responsible for qualifications registered on the General and Tailored Education and Training Qualifications Framework, which is part of the broader national qualifications framework. We as a council have to ensure that the providers of education and training have the capacity to deliver and assess qualifications and learning programs, and that they do so to the expected standards of quality. That's our mandate, and we derive our mandate from two acts of Parliament, namely the National Qualifications Framework Act, number 67 of 2008, and the General and Further Education and Training Quality Assurance Act, acronymed GENFEQA Act, number 58 of 2001, which had to be amended in 2008 to be in alignment with the National Qualifications Framework Act. Now, I'm going to give a brief summary, Chairperson, of our mandate. We have to develop and manage a framework of qualifications, and this we do in collaboration with the South African Qualifications Authority, SAQA, and the other two quality councils, namely the Council on Higher Education and the Quality Council for Trade and Occupation. And these processes are supported by the quality assurance policies and processes that we have to follow. We develop and implement the necessary quality assurance policies in relation to quality assurance of provision. So we've got policies in place, we've got the act, and we've worked with a number of sister organizations that I've just mentioned. And we maintain a database of learner achievements to learners who have achieved their qualifications through our systems. And we submit this data to the South African Qualifications Authority, SAQA, for them to upload the qualifications obtained through Maluti to the National Learner Records Database. We commission and publish research related to the development and implementation of the framework of qualifications. And we have relationships which include, in this regard, advice to the relevant ministers. It could be Minister of Basic Education, it could be Minister of Higher Education and Training, on matters relating to the General and Federal Education and Training framework of qualifications. We collaborate with the South African Qualifications Authority, SAQA, and the other QCs in terms of the NQF. And we do a lot of advocacy around the SAF framework and its qualifications. Chairperson, we have the external auditor's report on the pages that have been specified on the screen there of the annual report. The CFO will be touching on some of them. However, we need to indicate that we have achieved the 17th unqualified audit opinion since our establishment in 2001. It is our aspiration, and we're working hard towards getting a good audit. As a matter of fact, the senior managers and executive managers have signed a pledge in front of all the staff members, committing to getting a clean audit. And I'm holding them to that. They want a clean audit. We can't be getting an unqualified audit opinion for 17 years without graduating to a clean audit. So that is the commitment that we are making to this committee. And we are working hard towards the attainment of that goal. At this point, I'm going to hand over to Ms. Elam Smehi, with your permission, Chairperson, for her to continue the presentation.
Good afternoon, honorable members. I'm going to be presenting the part that summarizes performance information or program performance information. The report shows our vision and mission and values. Then we've done a summary of performance and service delivery environment in the report. We'll take the report as read, it summarizes the environment that we are operating in terms of external factors that affect us, as well as organizational factors. And then we have reported under program 1, 2, and 3, our achievements and our non-achievements, and then we will make a concluding statement on what we are doing to try and improve on performance information. Now, our vision, it hasn't changed for the 5-year term that we are going to be ending next year. We are a trusted authority, Frontier Assurance of Education Provision, recognized locally and internationally. And our mission statement is captured as you see it. It's very long, I won't go through it. Then our values, they are our values. They haven't changed since we crafted them in 2015-16 up to when we close the 5-year term next financial year. Then in terms of program performance, our overall performance for 2017-18, of the targets that we set for ourselves, we achieved 83%, and we could not achieve 17%. In comparison with the previous years, this was an improvement, because in 2015 we achieved only 58% of the target, and in 2016-17 we achieved 79%. So we moved from 79 to 83%. The aim is in future we must attain all the targets that we set at the beginning of each financial year. Now, in terms of that overall performance, when you separate it per program, program 1, 67% of targets were achieved and 33% were not. Details will follow. Program 2, 86% against 14, and program 3, all the targets were achieved. This is how program 1 looks like. It is administration, which consists of those sub-programs, both CEO, PR and communications, ICT, finance and supply chain management, and human resource management and development. And each of these units have an indicator in the next slide. Those six indicators in program 1, the first indicator and the second indicator have to do with compliance with respect to our APP and our quarterly reporting. And then the third one relates to communication, and then the fourth one relates to ICT, the fifth one relates to human resource management and development, and the last one, financial management. And if you look at this graph, the last two indicators were not achieved. One, the target was 100, the output was 79. Finance, 900%, and the output was 99%. And the next slide shows the indicators that we underachieved. Under indicator 1.1.5, this is where we were measuring performance agreement submission, both assessment and performance agreement. And this is where we underachieved, and the results will be seen in the next slide. The finance one, which was the compliance of 30-day payment to service provider, we didn't meet the target as planned. Now, these are the reasons that we came up with from the program managers and as an organization, because if you remember, HR and finance cut across the whole organization. Late submissions of performance documents resulted in us attaining an output of 79%. And it is the responsibility of the entire organization to make sure that that thing is improved. So management has updated the policy on PMDS so that it allows the CEO to implement consequence management for those who fail to submit on time as required by DPSA. Indicator 116, underperformance was due to ineffective control and monitoring, because this is where we measure whether people submit their invoices timely so that finance can pay within 30 days. And this is about us improving the internal controls within finance and also within the different units so that we validate invoices on time and submit on time for payment. So these are the areas of underperformance in program 1. In program 2 deals with communication, curriculum and research. And in this program, this is where we evaluate curricula or develop. We also deal with certification. We also deal with verification of qualification. Now, in this program, the second sub-program is statistical information and research. The main functions here are about conducting research and reporting on indicators of quality and standards within the general and STEM education and training, and also maintaining the database that the CEO talked about, and conducting any other research or analysis and providing statistical support to other units within the organization. Now, in terms of program two, there were 7 indicators. Out of those 7, the third one, 2 and 3, is the one where we underachieved. This indicator deals with this one, where we're dealing with data sets of learners in terms of providing information that is utilized in certification, and we're not able to meet that target. And the reason was there were challenges with the quality assurance check to finalize the data set on time, because our deadline was set within 21 days, or the turnaround time was 21 days. So what we've done to improve that, we have redefined what the 21 days means in terms of the waiting period. When does it start, when does it end, so that we are able to process the database and communicate with assessment bodies on time. Program 3, this is where we deal with quality assurance of assessments and activities affect moderation of question papers, moderation of internal assessment in institutions, verification of monitoring, administration of exams and the monitoring of those processes during examination, managing concessions and irregularities that may come up during examination, and also external moderation of the marking process. In this program, before I go through the output, the second sub-program in program 3, this is the one which deals with evaluation and accreditation, where institutions apply to UMANUSI to be accredited, private institutions apply, and private assessment bodies apply, and we determine whether they have what it takes to implement our qualifications, and also whether they have the capability to assess those qualifications. Out of the 2 sub-programs, the output is on this slide number 54, where we have been able to achieve all the targets that were set. The reason why this one is very high, this is the moderation of question papers. We receive question papers that are set because our life cycle runs for 18 months. We receive question papers that are ahead of time. So we go ahead and analyze them and see whether they are okay. Now, because there was no underperformance here, there's nothing to say on this slide. In conclusion, what we have done as an organization, when there were errors, there were about a few errors that needed us to improve the technical indicator descriptors in the last financial year, and we reported them to the minister for correction, and that was approved. But we have set in place a performance information management system so that we can track on an ongoing basis what is happening. We can make sure that the storage of information that is recorded is kept under the guidance of the unit that I lead. And in addition to that, this year, we have introduced a team that will validate information so that we don't flex and, you know, go back to the old way of performing. But in addition to that, as the CEO has already said, to try and get a clean audit, we've also made sure that the indicators that are in the ATP are linked to the performance agreements of senior managers. We have developed standard operating procedures for each indicator so that we can work with the auditors to track how the indicator gets developed and if it is reported. And finally, last year in 2017, we introduced an audit tracking register. We took all the internal audit findings and external audit findings and put them on a register and allocated them per function so that each unit monitors its own audit findings so that we improve. And I think that has paid dividends, because that's why in supplementary information we don't have any material findings for 2017 and 18. Thank you very much.
afternoon, Chairperson and Honourable Members. I'm going to first take you just through a couple of slides in terms of human resources at Umalusi. I'm going to look at our employment and our vacancy, as well as our employment changes for the year ending the 31st of March 2018. This is our list. At the end of last year, 16-17, we had a total of 120 employees in total, while the post was 138. In 17-18, we have employed 131. Currently, our vacancy rate is only at 5%. This was reduced from last year's 13%. We made 52 appointments in the current financial year we're reporting on. In terms of employment changes, although we had that 52 appointments, unfortunately we had 21 terminations as well. They consisted of 12 resignations, 4 promotions, 3 retirements, 1 ill health retirement, and unfortunately 1 death of one of our employees. In terms of financial matters, I'm going to take you quickly through the prior year adjustments, statement of financial position as well as performance, and a couple of material items we would like to report here. Just first of all, on our slide and in our annual report, we've indicated that 2017, which 2016-17 has been restated, is indicated with an asterisk, and then 2018 is 2017-18 in the annual report. This was a correction of an error relating to the post-retirement medical aid benefit. We accounted for it in terms of graph. We accounted for it retrospectively, and the comparative figures have been corrected. As indicated on the audit report, we had 2 items against us. First of all, there was a misstatement in terms of our financial statements we gave to the auditors on the 31st of May. And when we signed off on the 31st of July, relating to our revenue, that was corrected before we signed off. And we also had an issue in terms of expenditure management, irregular expenditure, which I'll summarize when we get to that slide. First of all, our statement of financial position is on page 84 in the annual report. I'm going to do a bit of summary dissemination of the information on the next couple of slides. In the current year, we had current assets of 61.6 million and non-current assets of 42.6 million. Most of the non-current assets is made up of property, plant and equipment, about 85%. And in terms of our current assets, it's our cash and cash equivalent of 59.8 million. That's the highest item we've obviously put at the Corporation for Public Deposits to get the best interest rate. We've also got an item on our financial statement, 6.5 million in terms of a prepayment that relates to the regular expenditure that I'll explain. Our statement of financial position, the liabilities and net assets, that's also again on page 84. In the graph, I would just quickly like to explain our accumulated surplus makes up 71% of our net assets. Then I've got current liabilities of 16%. That's our payables from exchange transactions. I've got non-current liabilities made up of 5%. That includes the employee post-retirement medical aid benefit that we brought on, sitting at 4.7 million. Our statement of financial performance indicates our revenue from exchange transactions of 23.7 million for the current year, and revenue from non-exchange transactions, which is 124.6 million receiving from the department. Our other income includes income we did not budget for, as well as we've got our investment revenue of 5 million, bringing a total to 156 million for the current year. Both of these are on page 85 as well as 106 of the annual report. In a graph, as I've indicated, 125 million for our government grants, where the other sources of revenue is very low in comparison. The next graph is just our budget versus actual. For the 17-18 year, we had a budget of 163 million, but with the approved retained income, we had a budget of 220 million. Expenses, we only had 157 million. The revised budget included the 56.2 million that was approved by National Treasury for our project. The next slide, I've got up the expenditure. In terms of, we've got on our financial statements on page 85 as well. In terms of the current year, we had 161 million, which is about 73% of our revenue that we spent in the current year versus last year's 90.8%. Looking at it, our division between operating expenses is 56%. Our depreciation amortization is 2%, and our personnel cost is only 42%. In terms of National Treasury, there's a slight change in terms of bringing in capital expenditure, which is 4%. Depreciation and amortization is not a cash flow item. And then our goods and services move up to 55%, and our compensation to employees is 41%. This is just a better representation. In terms of the budget, we spend on operating expenditure 95%. Employee cost was at 96%. Amortization depreciation, we do not put a budget in, as I've indicated, it's a non-cash item. But the item where we underspend was in terms of our contingent and capital approved project, we only spent 12%. We've got the reportable matter, the background. A tender regarding the renovation of our building at 41 was awarded to a joint venture with three separate entities in March to the value of 76 million. The project started and payments were made to the value of 10.9 million. 4.4 million was capitalized as work in progress, and as I've indicated, 6.5 million is currently lying under prepayment for long lead items that the supplier indicated to us. We became aware of allegations of fraud regarding the submitted tender documentation. One of the JD members reported allegations pertaining to forgery of his signature through his lawyers in early November 2017. We followed the due processes with advice from our legal counsel, and consequently the contract was cancelled in on the 23rd of November. Since then, we have reported as follows. We reported to the National Treasury in terms of the triple PSA regulations, the Department of Basic Education. We also opened up a case of corruption in terms of the prevention and combating of corrupt activity. We also reported to this portfolio committee at the meeting held on the 27th of March. In terms of the way forward, we are in the process of instituting a civil claim against the joint venture. The committee said that a preservation order might be a way to go. We talked to our legal counsel, and we would like to inform you that a preservation order can only be sought if the service provider is dissipating the funds and assets with the intention of not paying Umalusi. Factually, this is not the case, and our legal counsel advised us not to proceed with a preservation order. We got the quantity survey report, it's been completed. Those documents will be used in the civil case. And currently we are busy with the process of compiling the court papers. And we want to see that the close of pleading will be completed before the 14th of December in the current year. While pursuing this case, we are continuing with the tender for next door, but we have divided it into two phases. Phase one is to appoint a principal agent or a project management team. We are almost complete with the evaluation to present to our council for approval. The second phase will be the appointment of the construction team with the assistance of this principal agent assisting us with the entire project from start to finish. Our accumulated surpluses. The DB assisted with a request to retain surpluses of 42 million. It's been granted by National Treasury. A revised budget for the 2018-19 year was submitted to the DBE. Some of the projects that we included is still renovation to the amount that we've agreed upon. We've got some ICT infrastructure upgrades that's very necessary to our current ICT system. We're still busy. We're almost done with phase one of the enterprise contact management system to move to phase two, as well as our employment equity plan is currently under revision. The regular expenditure in the current year, management identified the tender awarded as irregular, and that's due to it was not fully in compliance with all the CIDB regulations and incorrect levels were used when awarding. From management side, we investigated and found no official liable in terms of law for this irregular expenditure. Our internal audit reviewed the tender process, the validity and accuracy of the awarding, They reviewed the payments made as well as the funds in cancellation of the contract, and as identified, no official was found liable. The external auditors raised this matter in terms of an audit report in terms of irregular expenditure. That is due to them also finding another 79,000 that we've done in terms of the renewal of contracts without going through a competitive process of sourcing three quotes. Management will follow a process of regressive disciplining steps in the months to come. Lastly, on irregular expenditure, the correct authority condones regular expenditure to the amounting of the amount indicated there. We went to our council and they condoned it. First of all, there was non-compliance with supply chain management regulations of 81,000 in 2015-16, and acquiring of goods without going through a competitive bidding process of sourcing three quotes, that was 140,000 in 16-17, and the renewal of a contract without going through a tender process for 57,000, again of 16-17. Now what's remaining in terms of irregular expenditure, a condemnation will be proceeded to National Treasury to deal with that. There's a new instruction note that was issued now on the 25th of September, and any applications must be now made to the Accountant General in terms of that. We have identified issues and we will monitor in terms of monitoring and continuous in terms of the improvement plan. One of our issues in terms of supply chain management is vacancies arose at critical times during the financial year, and then when we do recruit people with the correct skills that are very good at their jobs, they get astronomical counter offers. So we are currently facing a challenge to get the right people in the right jobs. In terms of related party transactions, we've listed there in terms of the grant we received from the Department of Basic Education, the payments we are making to our associated institution pension fund, as well as remuneration paid to our council member, as well as our executive and senior managers. This is on page 108, note 21. Just for interesting sake, we did the comparison last year as well. Our executive management remuneration, which is level 13 and above, only makes 23% of our entire payroll bill. Our top 8 expenditures reflected on the slide, whereby the employee cost is the top item at 67.6 million. Our moderator and verifier cost is the second highest, where we get retired teachers to be moderators and verifiers of our processes, as we can't employ these people full time. Then we've got our travel accommodation, as well as our communication expenses and so forth. These expenses on page 85, just to quickly indicate, our employee cost and moderator cost went up. Employee cost went up. The percentage is the percentage of the total of total expenditure for the year. It went up, but it is because we employed more people as well. The moderator and verifier costs also increased. Our travel and accommodation went down a bit, as well as our communication expenses. With certification expenses going up, we sourced new paper in the last financial year. Our consulting and depreciation remained the same, and then printing and station also went down.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. As we conclude, I just want to make a few points on the current issues that we are dealing with. First of all, it is the issues that were raised by the external auditors. Which issues we are dealing with now, so that we don't have a recurrence of those problems, happening again. First of all, it is the issue of accreditation income recognition. That this goes for the reconciliation that has to happen between the income that we get and the actual accreditation and evaluation that we do as an organization. And it is also around the irregular expenditure monitoring that we have to focus on that and ensure that there is no irregular expenditure that happens in the organization. It is also on the notion of contract management monitoring, that we have to monitor the contract that we have in place at Umalusi, and also around the internal controls regarding the management of performance reporting. Already, Mem Smith has indicated the mechanisms that have been put in place to do to control the performance management of the staff at Umalusi. Also indicating the standard operating procedures that she mentioned earlier on. And the CFO has also worked out a plan on dealing with the other three bullets, you know, above. Now, as management, we're already working on these, and I want to convey our appreciation to the Chairperson of Council, Professor Volmink, and the members of the Council for their support and for their advice on a number of issues that we confront on a continuous basis. And also thank the Chairperson of the Portfolio Committee, Negina, and the honorable members of this committee for supporting us throughout the 2017-18 financial year and for the opportunity to present this report to them. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, CEO. The Chairperson has a personal matter to attend to, so I'm standing on her position for this short period. Colleagues, we have received the report, the presentation from Umalusi. I would now open for engagement. Can I see any indication from members? Oh, okay, Honorable Fako. Honorable Machis.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you, Prof. and Dr. Kutiochi. Presentation is until we got into the next, the second presentation, I thought that it would be 1-2, 1-2, 1-2. But coming to the second part of presentation, I picked up the yes, it's the second part, the financial part. There are so, eyebrow raising issues that I noticed it's more especially the supply chain not following the procedure, the correct procedure, especially that one of three quotations, it's repeating itself. Why? And according to the, you know, this part of presentation is having some concern that I didn't expect Manusi, because I thought that Manusi is a big job. The contract management monitoring, it boils back to accounting officer. Why is such a problem repeating itself? Internal control regarding the management of performance reporting. So that means with our management there's something that is lacking. Have we identified where the linking the weak linking chain is? Because I understand you are in process of addressing these findings, still in process. What have you done when they did it previously? Was just that because it was not their fault, or I don't know how you captured it, was that it was not, you didn't find them. Yeah, it was not according to the manager. I'm sorry, I didn't catch up it correctly. But I wanted just to know what, after the findings of the previous financial year, that is the supply chain is doing such a mistake, and now they are repeating what were your steps taken against them. And then this JV member who forged this, and we are busy trying to recover the money. Do you still have links with this company? Are you going to be able to recover this money? Or you think your lawyers will be able to do it? You will not be up there with food because it's no more having a contract with you, it's not responding, it's not having now. You cancelled the contract with them. Are they still available and cooperative to answer to your request that you want your money back? Did he assisted with the request to retain surpluses of 42 million? Was the surplus, did it occur because you underspent or your budget, your budget plan was not fulfilled or was mismatched with the service delivery? These 42 million rand, where, why did you have such a? And there's this irregular renovation tender not in full compliance with the 10 million. Let me read it. The last one, there are irregular activities that are condoned by the council. Non-compliance with supply chain regulations, all those that are mentioned on page 49 are condoned. Did you condone them to overlook the supply chain regulations, or do you are permitted to do it like that? According to the regulation. Thank you, Chairperson. Furthermore, I appreciate the report. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you to Umarusi. I think that I think the one thing that Professor Bonnick said about the council itself, like it sounded like this year saying a new council is coming in. I just didn't understand what you meant.
Council, yeah, for
in June. I can respond.
Okay, and I don't understand how the process works. Who appoints the new council? How, what is the process, and who's responsible for things that we get?
People
like yourself again. I was under the impression that you're staying. So, I just want to say thank you for the report. And you know, when you talk about the customer, you were expecting a clean work, kind of like a little bit of you know, just deflecting to see once again that Malusi has received an unqualified report with funding. And as my colleagues have already said, it looks like it's a recurrent issue. And so one would wonder, like, you know, what steps have you taken up so far to ensure that, you know, like, unqualified audit immediately, you say what steps should be taken, and not before 4 years concurrently, and it's very similar observation and finding. And this has happened also with DBE. DBE today finds itself having a qualified audit. So I'm more wary of getting to that stage whereby now you're getting a qualified audit. So we watch over and also to make sure that we have technical assistance. In the first place, when somebody is I think by now the issue of quotation, re-quotation, I think each and every person knows out there, each and every South African knows that they have to, that if you're a tenderer, that there are 3 quotes that you're waiting on. And also renewing a contract. Who decided to take that step without actually taking the right step, okay? And what reprimand has been, put in place? What has happened to you? What is the accountability and what steps have been taken to ensure this? And when it happened previously, as the police asked, what did we do and how come it's coming back again? The other thing that I'm interested in is that I appreciate the fact that you've given us your vacancy, your list of vacancies, but it's not very clear who is doing what, because it says you have higher management, you have middle management, and then you have skilled and unskilled people. If you can have a proper organogram of Omalisi, so that we know, if you're saying that we're receiving the audits of unqualified funding, who should be sitting and saying, you are the one who's actually at fault here. So if you could just maybe have an organogram that is more descriptive of responsibility. We say that we have 7 vacancies that are open at the moment. Do you intend to fill those vacancies? And the budget cuts that we are seeing throughout the department, have they affected you? And if they are going forward, if they're going to affect your target? And what do you intend to do in terms of ensuring that you keep your target at the same time? I'm not sure if you're having any, because I don't know, it looks like your budget, I don't know if the inflation was taken into consideration. I don't know if it's the same. Maybe you can just clarify that. Thank you very much, Chair.
We've got another member.
Actually, I don't remember if we voted to be each
other. So, okay. We'll deal with it another time. We have got another member who has joined us, but it's unofficial. She's going to be participating as an observer in the meantime. So she has got speaking rights. I'm sure colleagues, you don't know her. Maybe it's a way of introducing herself. Maybe she can tell us who she is before she speaks. Over to you.
Okay. Afternoon, everyone. I'm Honorable King, officially now still in the Department of Science and Technology, will be moved over hopefully soon to education. My question was basically on slide 37, your revenue spend and where you get your funding from. You can actually realize that most of the funding from Umalusi is basically gathered from your parliamentary grants and stuff from the department itself. I would like to know if you have any public-private partnership funding that comes into Umalusi, given that if you consider Umalusi is not only accrediting public schools but also private schools. And then your expenditure, irregular expenditure of 10.9 million. No officials are going to be held accountable. which was established. But at the end of the day, who is actually going to be held accountable for this loss, or is it also just going to fall under the way to be condoned as well? So that's basically it.
Thank you very much. Honorable Bosha, do you have?
Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. I also have my few of them. I just wanted to check on a few issues that I encountered in the report, but mainly to also appreciate the fact that Umaruse has been very consistent in the performance for the past 17 years. They have been achieving an unqualified audit. We really appreciate that, and we want to see further improvement going forward to a clean audit. We would also want to appreciate the fact that some of the targets that have been set for Umaruzi, they have been reached, and you know, we have gone beyond the set target. However, if the rider for me, I raise a question on that as well, as it is I'm commending you for the work done, but I also have a question on a financial point of view. The question relates to issue, how did you deal with the environment with regard to funding the additional activities that you had not planned? Where did you get the money? I know that Umaruzi had a budget cut, and if they had a budget cut, I would like to know whether, since after receiving that indication of the cut, did you also adjust your target so that they are able to match the funds that you will be having for the financial year? I'm asking that question mainly because you look at the report. In many of the programs, you see under and over. So, possibility that you might have under budgeted, or possibility that you have also over budgeted, and then whether your budget was realistic. You know, like from the side of finances, I know that Umaru has been performing very well. But yesterday when the AD was reporting, they said that they were talking about the three with the sector. They spoke about Umaruzi, state and the department, and talked about the financial figures. What is your... Because I suppose that you had a rap in the meeting. Can you comment on that thing? Because they were questioning the financial statement. They were saying that there was something that was amiss with the financial statement for the first time with Umaru. I wonder what really happened. Maybe if you can clarify us, it will help us to better understand the problem. And then most of my questions are on the financial aspect. The other point relates to the audit outcome. Of course, you are very consistent, but also there's no change in the outcome. Still there, you are stuck. It seems as if you are stuck. And then to a certain extent, I'm suspecting that there might be some things that are starting to fall short, because there's a little bit of a regression. If you look at for the first time that you have received an unqualified audit that has got findings, and in the past you never did that, what are the shortcomings that you are experiencing that are dragging you down?
because for us, like when we look at the entire sector, including the provinces, it's very few provinces that are able to rise up as like actually one province. The Western States, some of the provinces are not really going up. And then it would be very bad if we allow even our entities to follow that direction. So we want Umalusi to emulate those, you know, to be a model for those provinces, and not to, you know, to see them as their own model. We don't want you to go to that direction, because it will really drag down the performance of the entire sector. So those are the few questions that I had. Thank you very much.
Chairperson, I want to allow the CFO to comment first, and then I'll mop up after him.
I'm going to try and answer all the questions. First of all, there was a question in terms of the supply chain management issues, in terms of the receipting or contract management and monitoring. In the last financial year, we went through a cycle of updating our policies, and we're now at a monitoring and improvement phase, where we need to see where is their gap, where must be strengthened more. The issues in terms of supply chain management raised was in terms of that monitoring aspect of it. The three regular expenditure that was brought to the table, the one we identified, it was a submission, but due to the nature of the submission, it did not meet the requirements of National Treasury to be a deviation. And on our part, it's that lack of in-depth supply chain management knowledge that we need to strengthen in our organization. The second one we identified, but the last step of reporting it properly to National Treasury was not done. So again, it comes to that monitoring where we need the resources to strengthen that unit. Like I said, it's a continued process, and hopefully we'll be able to do that. The sentiment that's in the irregular expenditure, it refers to no official liable in terms of law. There's a couple of steps you follow in terms of condemnating irregular expenditure. First of all, the investigation must be lodged by management to identify, they must conduct an assessment on why it happened, what was the root cause, which employees are responsible. Did the entity suffer a loss, or did they get value for money in terms of the contract? One of the contracts in the previous financial year, everything was done correctly, except when the contract was signed, the provider was non-tax compliant. It was an oversight. If that formed part of the submission, everything would have been fine. It's these nitty-gritty that's keeping us achieving this clean. As well as, you know, as soon you must estimate or see was there any fraud committed by your employees in terms of that, then you must follow another set of reporting it to the correct authority in terms of that. Now, if nobody is liable in terms of law, you did not suffer a loss. You can't get the money back from your employees. If value was gotten for what was paid, you need to account for it, and it needs to be kept captured on the register. In terms of the JV, we are going to, hopefully, we are positive we'll be able to recover the money from the JV members. The court action will not just be instituted against the JV specifically responsible for the fraud, but as well in the director's personal capacity. We've checked they've got 4 or 5 companies registered on CSD, and we're going to list all of them to say that if they can't give us service on this company, what's to say they're not going to do this to another government organization? Mm-hmm. I've explained the regular expenditure. In terms of a condonement, in the old framework, we captured everything on the register. We submitted everything to National Treasury. Basically, they said there was only 2 items that is not within their power, they're not condoning it, must be condoned by our council. Again, we had to give all of those reports that we investigated. Nobody is liable in terms of law. The organization did not suffer a loss. The service was provided, the way it was procured was flawed, but nobody was any financial incentive for conducting that contract. Staff members were called in terms of a couple of supply chains. Processes start with a bit ignorant, the policy was strengthened, we got them to confirm, nobody got a financial kickback in terms of those transactions, and we were happy with that. The same process will be followed with the next one. As I indicated, we need to strengthen our monitoring and contract processes. I've noted the one in terms of a proper organogram. Currently we only have got a short version on our annual report, indicating the top line, but not the entire organization. It takes up a lot of pages to put the entire organization, but we'll look into that. Currently, we are reporting salary bands as per the National Treasury Annual Report template, but we'll also look into it to make it a bit more user-friendly. Our budget cuts. Last year, a 2.5% budget cut was done on a lot of the departments. In effect, Lucy, there was 10.9 million cut over the MTS period. This was done by the Presidential Critical Committee and it was approved by Cabinet. But Lucy further had a blow because we are not registered for VAT. And that extra percent we need to fork out for our goods and services is also affecting our pockets. There is a couple of projects that I know National Operations has not gone into this year. We only recruit monitors and verifiers every third year. So I know that specific project for the current year, it was not done, it was done in the previous financial year. I wouldn't say we've moved targets specifically, but we look at projects, how best we can accommodate them, how best it can be economical and effective with the budget that we've got. Currently, yes, the large amount we do get from the department. And no, we are not in any public-private partnership. Currently, obviously, as soon as our units can move money between their own budget, once a year we look at the entire organization as a whole, mid-year, to see if there is one unit that's underspending, that put it on the table, if it moves to another one, and then we factor in any accumulated surpluses that is allocated. Most of the current year's accumulated surpluses went for the capital project. Some of these projects we put on hold last year when that budget cut came through, with the understanding if that is approved, we can use it for that, not affecting our current operation. In terms of the financial statement, I think what the Auditor General raised yesterday is that material adjustments between the 31st of May and the 31st of July, which Lucy never had feared previously. The auditors picked up to the end of July that some of our revenue journals were posted in the incorrect period. Revenue journals were supposed to be posted for the April period in the new financial year, were posted again last year, April, which had a huge influence on our revenue budget. It was about $9 million that had to be corrected. It was a system error. We picked it up, we corrected it. But it was the first time we've got something like that, and it's reported on our annual report. It was a financial misstatement, but it was corrected. The correct figures is in the annual report. I just quickly want to draw your attention to slide 42. Breakdown of where exactly in the current financial year did we have under expenditure. In terms of our operating expenditure, we only had 5% not spent on that. In terms of our employee cost, it was 96%, with most of it being our contingent and capital approved projects, of which the building was 20 million that's still lying there that we need to expense as soon as we get the approved supplier to do the job. So it's not like we underspend in terms of our operations, it's mostly on our capital projects.
Thank you very much, Jacobin. Chairperson, I want to reassure the Portfolio Committee on Basic Education that we aspire to get a clean audit. And that is the song that we sing throughout the organization. The things that are overtaking us really, honestly, frustrate us when they do okay. And we also want to agree with the Portfolio Committee that UMALUSI as a quality assurance body has to lead by example. We can't be getting unqualified audit reports for 17 years without graduating to clean audit. That is the message that I deliver to my staff on a continuous basis. And when we get these things that have been recorded here, it frustrates the council, it frustrates me as the CEO, I mean, to breaking point. So you enjoy my commitment in actually realizing a clean audit. Of course, there are some missteps, but Portfolio Committee members must understand that there is still order and accountability at UMALUSI. People account when they've done these things. And we've had people having to account to me to say, why did you allow this to happen? Why did you get three quotations? And that was recorded accordingly. So that there is accountability. Now, where the CFO is saying it has to be done according to law, where you see that there is no criminal liability, there's nothing you can do. Where there's been no loss to the organization, there's nothing that you can do. Nobody has benefited or not decoupled. That will not be tolerated at UMALUSI. Not at all. Not at all. Now, I want to just then respond to a few issues that the CFO has already responded to, and just be more specific. There are no links between us and the members of the JV as it stands. They are not cooperating. That is why we have taken the matter to the SAPS, to Treasury, and to our lawyers to say we need to reclaim that money. It belongs to the South African public. We want it back. They are not cooperating, so we are going to deal with them in a manner that they deserve because they are not cooperating with us. I need to indicate that the surplus that we have is not because some of our projects have suffered and we did not deliver on them. We have delivered, but it is because we are frugal. We are not extravagant as an organization. And we plan in advance to say we want to say, like the building that we have bought next door, the one that is in question now with the JV. There was planning that we are going to buy that building. We bought that building out of our reserves. Even with the renovation, we wanted to renovate with our reserves, which are still there, and Treasury and the DDF allowed us to keep those reserves for that purpose. It's just that this tender was overtaken by this unfortunate situation. Prof, do I comment on the appointment of council?
Yeah.
Okay. The council at UMALUSI is appointed by the Honorable Minister of Basic Education. The minister sends a call through a government gazette and through advertising in the national newspapers for people to nominate people with the requisite skills to come and serve in the council. Then there is a nomination process, and then the minister looks at the people that are nominated against the criteria in the Gianfranco Act in terms of the set of skills that we need in council, you know, the competencies that we need in council. Thereafter, the minister appoints the members of council. At the point of appointing the members of council, the minister already appoints the chairperson of council. So the council will serve for 4 years, and has been appointed as I've outlined, and will serve up to year 2022. It is a new council that started in June 2018, having served, now it's June 2018, it will serve up to 2022. The old council started in June 2014 up to June 2018. So there is that process, that is a public process, that everybody will know about. I need to just indicate that when it comes to the budget of UMALUSI, we have suffered because of the budget cut. But even if you were to look at the budget of the organization without the budget cut, you'll realize that the organization is getting a pittance in terms of the system that it has to quality assure. I mean, talking exams alone, we're talking 600 to 800,000 candidates countrywide that we have to quality assure. So we are not only talking DBE, and we're talking only here about exams. We're talking DHET, we're talking IEB, we're talking Sakai and Benchmark Assessment Agency. And the issue of examination is not the only function that we fulfill. The system is big. The quality assurance body is small. And we have to make bold pronouncements when it comes to our quality assurance work to say, we are sure this has happened. Whereas the sample that we have looked at is sometimes very small because of the budget that we get. We had a workshop of all the NQF bodies in July of this year, if I'm not mistaken, under the leadership of SAWA. Coincidentally, they requested Professor Volman to chair. And the four bodies, SAWA, CHE, QCTO, UMARIS, when you look at the role that we fulfill for the country in terms of quality assurance the system, we found that we are being shortchanged in terms of the allocation of the budget. And with the three other bodies reporting to the Minister of Education and Training, there are processes now to look at the actual needs against the system. We are the only one of the four who are reporting to basic education, and I want to make that appeal here to say we have to expand the budget, we have to expand our samples, so that when we make our pronouncements, we make them boldly. Now, just to amplify the point that the CFO has made about triple P, yes, indeed, we don't have a triple P. However, the private body, independent institutions like IEB, Sakai, Benchmark Assessment, and independent schools, independent student colleges, they do pay for the services that we offer.
Yeah.
The Constitution says whoever wants to establish an independent institution has to pay for the services offered by government. So we charge them and they pay. But it is not on a triple P basis, in the strictest sense of the way, triple P. Let me see. Chairperson, as I conclude, this thing of unqualified audit reports by UMA has to come to a stop. And that much I've made clear to the staff. I've made the senior managers and executive managers sign a pledge that they are going to work hard to get a clean audit. And that was done in an open meeting in the presence of all the staff members, executive managers, and senior managers had to line up and sign with me that we have to get a clean audit. That's how serious we are with getting the clean audit. I'm looking forward to coming next few years with a smile to this committee to say, ultimately, we got that clean audit. I want that clean audit for myself. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much.
Maybe I'll just, if I may, Chairperson,
just
comment very briefly. Yeah, I think as the person representing council, and by the way, Honourable Machetti, as the CEO has explained, the council is appointed for a period of 4 years, and we can't all disappear. There has to be some continuity. And so the minister applies a mind to the nominations made, as the CEO has explained, and we have a bit more than half of the new council are new members. And they are very well respected people in the field, so we look forward to that. All I want to say, Chairperson, is that we have provided the new council with a very substantive handover report. All the outstanding matters, including the matters that have been raised here today. For example, Honourable Makoto, you make a very good point about this. We've been consistent, but we've been plateauing. In fact, if any, there's been some regression. This I will report to the council, and the council will have to take steps to make sure that we hold the necessary officials accountable, to make sure that we don't come here with another set of explanations next. I just wanted to give you that assurance. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Professor Kamik and King Om. In actual fact, you know, I was very happy when the CEO said that they called even the lower level, you know, players within the institution, the staff, because in my view, I believe that sometimes we make the mistake of only communicating at the top and then leaving the lower levels out and cannot even, you know, sometimes express the mission or vision of the institution. So I'm very much hopeful that it will bring the correct result. And like we have indicated to the Department of Basic Education in the morning that we will be taking the journey together. It's not your responsibility alone. So we'll be helping each other to achieve that, because really we have been, you know, relying on that good work, that good example that Umansi has given us, you know, as we talk to others within the sector. We have given Umansi that, you know, that respect and, you know, that trophy. So, good luck in the future. So I'll hand over to the chairperson.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, for holding up. So we are done with Mali. Okay, thank you very much, Mali. can we move now to SAFE, where again we'll be interacting with the SAFE. And the SAFE, before you even start, you know how much you are looking forward to listening to this meeting, when it comes to the issues of ethics, what is happening in the schools, and so forth and so forth. We are going to be talking about that, continuous teacher development, to even with the department in the morning. We have been saying that is the core business of the department, that is the backbone of the department, the teachers that are developed. So we look forward to hear exactly what is it, how have you performed in the past financial year that you are engaging on. But when I look at the side of space, I think it warrants us to have introductions, as they're still busy preparing the projection of their presentation. We can start, CEO, you can start leading us on the introduction of your team. Thank you.
Thanks, Honorable Chair and Honorable Member. We are apologizing for our chairperson who has unavoidable prior engagement, so it's not here with us. So today we are with two of our executive committee members, Councillor Makila on my right hand side first, and then Councillor Traise as well, and also the CFO. So I will start the presentation and then over just to do the initial. No, the CFO from the DDE.
Pardon me.
What are you saying now?
Yesterday we were here.
Let us know the CFO, the new CFO of the department of DBE.
But we're not introduced.
He was introduced. Yeah. The first time he came.
That's okay. There's so many new CFOs.
No, he was introduced. So we have got two CFOs on the table now.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, DBE and SAFE. But then maybe Honorable Machezo, to further introduce to CFO, this is CFO Kunong. I'm not sure whether he's related to Bloemfontein or what, because I know that he knows who's Bloemfontein. Maybe I'm coming from the same province. I won't get into that one, but outside the meeting, you can further introduce yourself. Yeah, thank you.
Thank you. Okay, so in terms of our presentation outline, I'll briefly look at the legislative background and also the legislative environment, then hand over to the CFO to deal with the OSET financial statements and the audit report. Then I'll take over in terms of just giving an overview of our performance with regard to the five programs, then continue the matter. Just quickly, in terms of our legislative background and delivery environment, one of the things that we are adhering to is our Vision 2030 in terms of the National Development Plan. One, with regard to making sure that we really have professional standards within the country, but also ensuring that we put quality, continuing professional development in terms of what provisioning takes place to with regard to the educators. But also part of our responsibility is to make sure that we monitor the uptake of professional development. Again, in terms of the National Development Plan, one of the areas that we are working on is the issue of certification check, but also working towards introducing the recertification that is linked to registration within the system. Obviously, we are not working in isolation. We report to the public agency under the Minister of Basic Education. Therefore, the medium-term strategic framework 2014-2019 in terms of output number one becomes applicable to us. And from the action plan to 2019, program three becomes again relevant to us. Now, in terms of our achievements, most of the things that we are doing are towards achieving the outcomes and outputs that are in program three. Our mandate, one, is to register educators, as you all know, but just to also re-emphasize that in terms of Section 5B, the issue of professional development is very clear, legislation is very clear, we are managing a system for continuing professional development as opposed to provisioning that development, and also making sure that we set and maintain ethical and professional standards. The Integrated Strategic Training Framework is very clear that we need to be playing quality management roles in regard to the provisioning of professional development, as we approve providers but also endorse professional development activities. And lastly, with regard to the National Policy Framework for Teacher Education and Development, that is giving us the in and out of the CTPD system. So, faith, having a role of implementing and managing, and with most important quality assurance for the professional development system. And lastly, in terms of the NPF Act number 67 of 2008, we need to make sure that we work collaboratively with the quality consultants in the system, but also work towards making sure that state is recognized as a professional counselor with SAMPA, and finally make sure that we develop the professional designation for teachers. So that's the kind of environment that we are working under. And let me just hand over to the CFO to give you the UNCED financial statement.
Thank you, Chair. We'll start with the RACAM on page 39 of the annual report. There's a table which is showing the financial performance of our policy and research. So the correct table is the table which we're showing on the screen, the one which is there. Was an error there during the process of the printing of the annual report. We picked it up after printing. Moving from that, we'll go to the statement of the financial performance, which is commonly known as the balance sheet. In terms of our balance sheet, we had an increase of our assets by 21% due to retained surplus of 18 million and an increase which arose from the increased year subscription, which also affected the cash equivalent of the organization. Our non-current assets remained unchanged because there was no acquisition of a material capital asset. Current liabilities increased by 81%. We had unspent grants, which is the CPTD grant of 1.5, and we had also an account of our travel and accommodation, which there were a lot of activities which took place towards the end of the financial year, and that account, most of the invoices remained not paid because they were still within the payment time. They were not yet deployed, but we made provision for such expenditure. We have accumulated surplus increased by 18% due to the increased subscription which took place towards the end of the financial year, and the implementation part has the retrospective effect of 4 months, and that came in March and couldn't spend that money, came late. But the money anyway, a portion of it is intended for the provincial building reserve fund, which the council has taken a decision to create for the purposes of acquiring the provincial contact point. Chair, let us declare that the financial position of state is still positive and stable at the moment. Moving to the financial performance known as income statement. In terms of our revenue, which is arising from our operating transactions, increased by 16% because of the increase of the subscription. And we had an increase of 15% on the CPTD spending. In terms of CPTD, how we account for that money? They give us 9 million this year in terms of the approved budget. We'll take the 9 million with us, we'll work on our plan. So should we come to the end of the year and we didn't spend 1 million, that 1 million will carry it over to the following year for the same people. Then we account for that this particular year for the 8 million spent as we have received it, yet we receive it being 9. But the other one remains as deferred income in the balance sheet to be utilized in the following year. Our personnel expenditure increased by 2%. Last year, the council embarked on a job evaluation process and to determine the suitable resourcing human capital of the organization. During that process, the council took a decision, and it's well known that you can't run a job evaluation and you fill in vacant positions because to the end result require you to scale down. You'll find yourself in a compromised situation. So we did not fill the positions, of which 4 of them were at a senior level. They remained vacant, but currently we're in the process of this financial year too. Those positions because the job evaluation was concluded just after the end of the previous financial year. Our operating expenditure also increased by 15%, and the total expenditure increased by 5% due to the increased operating costs. Our surplus is sitting at 19 million when we round off the number. Approval was obtained from Treasury for the purposes of improving our ICT infrastructure and implementing the content decision of establishing the provincial contact point. That process of provincial contact point is underway. We are busy with the bidding process now to acquire those properties for the proposed. Moving to the next statement of changes in net assets, which shows how we, the movement of our assets. We had a total net asset increase of 18% because of the retained surplus arising from the increased subscription which took place towards the end of the financial year, which was 60% of over. Again, the very same issue of we did not have any acquisition of material in terms of non-current assets. Coming to the cash flow, our cash inflow increased by 16% due to the increase in subscription. The net cash flow increased by 124%. Because of the increase in payment. We also had an after deposit which was temporary in fixed accounts because after was in the process of opening its own account facility. That has been sorted out, they have their current account now, so that money is no longer kept in our books. Net increase in cash and cash equivalents due to the surplus. Cash and cash equivalents on the 31st of March 2017 was at 9.8 million and the necessary approval was obtained for the operational use. In terms of the auditor's report, Chair, there were misstatements which were picked up under our performance information. Those misstatements happened, they were minor misstatements, but they are material in the sense that once a number is wrong, it's wrong, were corrected just when the auditors began their audit. But the fact that we have to submit our statements in advance to them with those errors, they were recorded at that time. Then when they came to start the audit, we had picked up those errors and we declared to them and they were corrected during the audit process, but they had to be declared in their report. SAIS received an unqualified audit opinion check for the year under review. With those misstatements as stated in the audit report. Thank you.
Thanks, Chair. Moving to the program performance, let me start with program one, which is more about the registration of indicators and for three different indicators, one on the registration of new teachers, and the second one on updating your provisional and conditional registration, and the last one on issues around vetting and verification. And as you can see, the first two indicators have got positive deviation, and the last one slightly negative deviation in terms of our first quarter, which had some challenges with regards to the numbers that were supposed to be recorded because of there were some processes that were underway with the conceptualization of the entire registration and vetting and verification. We are also outlining what we mean by full registration, provisional, conditional, and also foreign registration. And from the numbers that we are registering, in terms of the new registration, it's clear that the majority of our registrations are coming from the higher education institutions in terms of your student teacher for professional registration.
the ones that are practicing are not many, and also we've seen some reduction in the registration of our foreign educators, and not much on conditional registration as well. The second indicator on updating registration status, again, the same trend continues in terms of changing the provisional status of the newly qualified educators to full registration. And you can see with regard to that one, we updated 23,185, which means it's 51% of all the updates that we've done. Coming to the third indicator, chair, which is the one that I said, it has partial achievement. It speaks to the issues of vetting and verification. And I think just to outrightly say to the honorable members that this vetting and verification numbers that you are seeing here were not necessarily done in terms of the two registers that we have. The register from the DSD, Department of Social Development, and the National Child Protection Register, and also the register from the Department of Justice and Constitutional Development. And we are giving the reasons why, and I think we've been doing that throughout the year in terms of engaging those two main departments with regard to the processes that we are working on. And from our offices, we are having mandatory individual written declaration. When you can check our application form, it's giving educators an opportunity to declare whether they've been convicted of any misconduct cases before. And also for all our foreign educator registration, we have implemented the police clearance as a first case, so that next year when we do it to all the educators, at least we know where the challenges are. Department of Home Affairs has been assisting us as well with regard to verifying the travel documents. And also we did a case study with regard to the Central University of Technology Group on day in terms of making sure that we get the data of final year students and verify their qualifications through the university prior to registering them fully when they graduate. Then we even managed to attend their graduation and handed over their certificate at the graduation ceremony. The UKZN also followed in terms of the pilot, so that next year when we implement across the entire system, at least we've made a case study, we tested, we piloted, and we have the results that are telling us where the challenges are likely to be with full implementation. And then continuing with the issues of vetting and verification, we reported in the last meeting when we were here that from January 2019, we are implementing the policy alerts across all the educators, whether you are foreign, you are national, or you are even student educator. It's going to be applicable to all of them. We are also indicating some of the concerns that are being raised by the teacher unions and also teachers in the profession in terms of the payments that are involved, paying fees and also paying the police clearance and all other issues. But I think with our consultations, we are reaching concerns that police clearance will go ahead with regard to that process. But I think one of the things that we are also beginning to do is to determine those convictions, Chair, that will warrant one to be registered and one not to be registered. Because if we don't do that, we're going to be found wanting in terms of implementing the entire process. What kind of convictions will go to fit to practice committee? So, and I'm thinking about the borderline that are likely to be saying yes or no. And some of them, obviously, things like your men and whatever would be a no-no. So we are giving up so that by the time we reach January for full implementation, everything is in order. The National Child Protection Register, we've done a whole lot of research, we've done legal opinions, we've done trilaterals between ourselves, DSD, and also DCE. And I think one of the things that we are seeing that we've reached sort of a cul-de-sac is that the legislation in terms of Children's Act is giving direct access to the employer. and we engage DSG as much as we like to, even the DG intervene. And it was clear that things was cannot get access directly. Until such time that Part B of the register is amended, and we made a submission to DSG so that that particular process can be taken into account. But in the absence, we're not going to leave the whole process. We will be dealing with the whole issue of police clearance and a whole lot of other things. Similarly, one of the things that we are doing together with DBE is to come up with a protocol between, say, DBE, DSC, and Department of Justice with regard to trying to untangle all those sticky issues that are hampering us from accessing those two registers. Department of Justice is very clear, even if you can check their website at the moment, they haven't concluded the process of updating the register. They gave us timeline up to December 2018. And after that, the Minister of Justice will make additional announcements, public announcements, to say the register is ready or not ready, so that we can get a question to continue with that particular process. Until such time that issue is resolved in terms of that register being usable, we're not in a position to utilize it. And those are some of the things that are frustrating us, and we are hoping that the trilaterals that we are having at the moment will be able to assist us with regard to moving forward. Program 2 is on ethics. We have two main indicators. I don't want to talk more about the actual number of cases received as an indicator for performance, because we don't have control over the kind of cases that we are getting. The two indicators are partially achieved, but I think what we want to register is that as compared to 2016-17, both of them were in red, and we moved to partial achievement, and we managed to conclude 4.25% of them, and we are giving a classification of the ones that we managed to conclude 327 in terms of the categorization, in terms of the functions that we had, and also the other areas that we went on. Also, just to remind honorable members that last year when we reported, we declared 248 cases that were carried over to the 17-18 financial year. So we were waiting on two different numbers, one for 17-18, but the other one for 16-17, and we are giving progress reports in terms of where we are with the 16-17 carryover cases. We've managed to do most of them, and I think in the next slide we'll be able to see where we are with regard to the three different financial years that we are working on. The 2017-18 also, we carried over 182 cases. And when I come to the, let me go to that slide, I'll come back to that one. The slide that I have here, you'll be able to see where we are with regard to all those cases that we carried over to the next financial year. 2016-17, we had 2.8, we are now at 200, and we've managed to deal with 202, which is 81% of the cases. And for 2017-18, which is the financial year that we closed, we carried over 182. We managed to conclude 147, which is 82.58%. And also, in addition, we're working on the current financial year. But I think moving back to the previous slide, we can see top 5 of our cases are one on corporal punishment, secondly verbal abuse, third one is sexual misconduct, fourth is unprofessional conduct in terms of your alcohol abuse, absenteeism, and all that, and the fifth one is fraud, theft, and financial management. So those are our top 5 cases that we have in the system. We are also indicating, out of the 300 227 cases that we concluded in 2017 cases financially. You won't have that slide in your page. The next slide we included that. We just want to show you the number of cases that were concluded in terms of in relation to the decision satisfaction that were taken. So as at 31st March, you can see we had 5 indefinite drop-offs. It means these people will never come back. We had a drop-off that maybe you, that particular person may reapply after a certain period, because that particular case was more about an educator who may have proposed love but not necessarily engaged in love with an educator. It ended up as proposing. So nothing happened moving forward. And also you've got a whole lot of drug off, but those were suspended for a particular period, but the people were fined because of issues like physical assault, corporal punishment, and verbal abuse, etc. So by the 30th of September, all in all, we had 67 struck-off within the cases that we dealt with. For 2017 financial year, in terms of the 202 cases that we dealt with, we are also dealing first in terms of the sanctions and also decisions that were taken. With regard to that one, we have 12 struck-offs and also other related sanctions. We sent to the Department of Social Development 24 names. Remember, in terms of the Children's Act, we are required by law to send names to the Department of Social Justice for Part A of the register, and already we sent 24 names with regard to that particular area. Third program on the CCTV management system. The first three indicators are speaking to teachers' participation in the CCTV management system, and not necessarily, we are not tracking participation in actual provisioning, but monitoring the uptake across the three different types of professional development. The first indicator is partially achieved. The next one is also partially achieved. But we also want to indicate that the first one is the one that performs extremely bad, because it's negative 22,189. This one is the one that is very bad across the entire organization. And I think you've seen in the morning when you were talking about the issues of professional development. If provisioning has got challenges, it has got ripple effect on the manner in which the CCTV system will also be covered. The other three indicators are more about the approval quality assurance processes. One, approval of professional development providers, and secondly, approval of endorsement of professional development activities, and also quality assurance on site of professional development activities. The three indicators, two of them over achieved and one was just achievement. We did very well with regards to those three checks. I'm trying to do some of the things because they are already in the annual report. This slide is just showing that in terms of the sign up, we are now at 333,784 educators in the system. And in terms of reporting, although we are moving very slow, but we are gaining a bit of momentum. And these are the slides that we collected by the end of September so that we can show some of the improvements that we engaged in since we closed the financial year. The fourth one is on professional standards. The framework and the actual standards have been developed, and I think you've seen them in the presentation. We can proudly say for the first time in the country now we have professional standards. They came late, yes, we agree, but finally they are here, and we'll be able to use them across the entire teacher education and development continuum in terms of informing initial teacher education programs, but also continuing professional development and criteria for entry into initial teacher education. We consulted widely in terms of variety of stakeholders in the country, and these are the stakeholders, and we are ready here for gazetting them before the end of the financial year so that they can be implemented as soon as possible. With regards to the last one on research, we are indicating the report that we worked on. We did a trend analysis of the cases that we are receiving since 2013 to 2017, and we are able to show in which provinces do we have what, and what kind of issues are we experiencing, including issues around piloting the whole issue of the registration scope of faith and others that we presented. We had two seminars and conferences. We did two policy briefs, and I think in conclusion, we just want the issues that Honorable Boshoff raised earlier on with regards to, which I forgot to mention, with regards to inclusive education. Yes, we do have a subcategory in our database of all inclusive education programs, and some of them are speaking to just education that we're talking about. And there are programs that we can share with members with regards to some of the professional development activities that educators can participate in. Then the issue, again, that you raised earlier on with regards to safety of teachers in schooling, indeed, the minister is calling the summit on Friday, and we will be participating. One of the angles that we try to look at from this point of view is the issue of alternative corporate management doesn't work with teachers. And I think we are calling for a more positive discipline, restorative discipline, that can begin to be addressed in our school so that we can deal with those kind of issues. But we are also saying we haven't dealt more with the issues of right responsibilities and safety of our educators. And again, those are some of the things that we'll be looking at, because we believe those three things in schooling, physical assault, sexual abuse, and verbal abuse, are sort of making a fertile ground for school-based violence to exist in school. And because it happens across, it's teacher on learner, it's teacher on teacher, learner on teacher, it's teacher on parent. So we're looking at from a holistic point of view to say, we need to start working on those kind of things. And we've got timelines in terms of coming up with a handbook and policy on those kind of issues that we want to take to the minister as part of our advisory processes so that we can finalize them. So, Chair, I think we'll leave it at that, and just appreciate the committee for your critical feedback, and also for all the questions that we gathered throughout the year. They make us, be on our future, and also, and also think harder through in terms of our processes and really shaping up and all that. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, it is a positive report. Maybe before I even open up, thank you very much, Faith, for giving us a positive outlook now when we look at Faith. At least, you know, we know where we come from within Faith. We'll always be angry after each and every presentation, but really, we come a long way. So, for us to be so relaxed and positive, really, it's quite a strike. Thank you so much. We know there's so much that you still need to do, but we can see you are indeed in a good direction. But before I even open up, I was worried when we were talking on the issues of subclasses and what about that. And my question was,
did you calculate it well, or was there really a need of increasing the subscription? I wonder what is the cause of such surpluses, you know, because you keep on saying it's after you have increased the surplus, the membership fee, the subscription. So basically, my question is, we are busy presenting our thing, then what is the need of
increment?
Because you know, we need you to think of these teachers. So whatever, whether it's 1 rand or 50 cents, but it's our teachers who are paid. So it's one thing that we need to look at. Can I open up honorable members for you to engage with, for your comments, your questions, whatever input that you want to come up with? Honorable Bashop, honorable person, I always make sure that you follow that.
Thanks.
It should be Bashop. It should be Bashop this time, then person.
Okay.
My chair, please. I'm sorry, my
King.
King. Honorable King.
Was it madam?
Oh, honorable Bashop. You can start, honorable Bashop.
Thank you very much, Chi, and may I also reiterate, we have come a long way. Congratulations. But unfortunately, I have to start on a negative note. Why did it take, say, so long to ask for access to the Child Protection Register and the Sexual Offences Register? You had practically 10 years to do it. I know you weren't the CEO, but you've also been part of SAFE for quite some time. And had we done this when the opportunity arose, we could have been in a much better position. So I just need to know why it was never done. You speak about the SAP clearance certificate. Is that going to be applicable to our incumbent teachers as well? And what are the type of questions that SAPs will have to ask to be able to give a clearance certificate, because we need to know that we have fit for purpose teachers in the field. Okay, Teacher White, you spoke about that, the minister that's having her summit or whatever on Friday. I'm still worried about the number of cases that we carry over year by year. I know it's decreased, and congratulations on that again. I just need to know, do we have enough competent staff in the ethics department? At one point you had 3 prosecutors full-time and 2 invigilators, I think, or investigators. Has this increased, or is it still the same amount? Because if it hasn't increased and you've got surpluses, we could always ask for a journal transfer to be able to fill these posts. And then your senior manager posts, the COO, has that post been chief operating officer, operational officer, whatever it's called, the POLA, has that post been filled yet or not? And then, Chair, I don't know if SACE is the body that has to take this forward. Maybe they can consult with DBE. Western Cape is the only province that has a SACE school hotline. Is there no way that SACE could be the driver to institute this in all the other 8 provinces? Because it is working very well. It's not just there for children, it's there for teachers, it's there for support staff, it's there for the boarding facility staff. Maybe that would also eradicate the attacks that our teachers are now experiencing, because then we could more quickly attend to a problem that could arise. CEO, 52% of your budget goes to the salary bill. I don't know how a business runs if you have a salary bill of 52%. It just cannot be. Can we just get a more background on this? You also spoke on page 25, you spoke about corporal punishment. How do you determine that 1 or 2 lashes could be acceptable? No corporal punishment should take place. I didn't like that remark. You also say that you are very happy that some provinces have come on board with regard to reporting, but not all provinces. What are you doing to those provinces that do not report? Because at the end of the day, the number of cases could be much higher. So we're sitting on a premise that these are the figures. All right, you spoke about on page 28 the 24 names that have been submitted to DSD. Have you followed up to find out if it's actually been done? Okay. And then, I spoke to DBE about it as well. These educators that do not sign up for CPTD, I just find it unacceptable that there are no consequences, even if it is voluntary, but I think you spoke about the diagnostic self-assessment test. But CPTD, they have to do. Why do we not institute some form of measurements to see to it that these teachers follow some consequence is put up against them? You speak about 13,740 uncaptured forms for sign-ups on page 30 for the CPTD. Shouldn't there be stricter measures implemented to ensure that these uncaptured forms are actually captured? Right, the special school you spoke to. On page 38, you speak to a presentation for SACE. It's on the registration scope, but I couldn't find it. Is that what you referred to just now? And then point four, you also say click on the copy. What copy? I can't, page 38, okay. Okay. All right, and then I think everybody will speak to the fact that the provincial officers have been a discussion point for since I've been on basic education, and we just don't seem to be able to finalize it. Could we, by next year, ensure that at least two or three provincial offices are up and running? And then on page 30, you speak about the MOU between SACE and DBE for the SA SAMS, so that you can get data from there. But you know that SAMS is not a mandatory requirement. So how are you going to ensure that this is going to capacitate you for the capturing of data? Unregistered educators. Could you give us a figure? Have you got any idea how many unregistered educators there are in South Africa? All right, and then I also need to know, with regard to the financial statements, what measures do you have in place to ensure that your internal controls are adequate to eradicate those misstatements that your CFO spoke about? Thank you very much, Chair.
I'm out.
I enjoy it when it's committee.
Yeah.
Because we've got ample time.
No, that's why I'm
we're
so
not rushing to go to the chamber in one part. I just love it. Honorable Bathoni.
Thank you, Chairperson. Honorable Boshoff has fed them out. Chairperson. Yeah, you paid revenge. You revenged Chairperson. Just don't allow me to say thank you, CEO and CFO. You know, it was a pleasure to listen to your presentation. I even forgot to note what I want to ask, because we never had such a report that is so pleasing, of which I noticed it from the AG's report, that maybe today you will get a positive report. But as I have said, whether it can be so good or so bad, the question is not to the chairperson. And on program one registration, as Comrade Boshoff has asked, the question that so I don't want, Conway doesn't mean what you are talking about. Analyze it.
Even if it is bad, it's
very good. Yeah. I wanted just to know
that what is your relationship with the provinces on registering educators in order to get the correct data of educators that you have? I didn't catch up now that I remember you said you have opened offices in certain provinces. Was it 3 or 2 provinces last time? Only 2. So now I didn't catch up you reporting the progress now. How far are you from that 2, or are you still stagnant and still 2? And how do you reach the regions, because the provinces are far, and as they are far, the districts are having issues. I'm asking this because I'm always concerned about the districts that are not capacitated. Teachers that should travel a long way to the offices that are 400 kilometers away from the provincial office where the state official is. So how do you capacitate the province, I mean the district, so that cases should be reported as they come? And as I was asking the registration, there are teachers that are unqualified. And these teachers that are unqualified, they also commit misconduct. To whom are they accountable? Because they are working with it. And the verification for them, how can we, or what is your strategy in order to reach those teachers as well? And another thing, Jefferson, I'm just concerned about this more, the slow pace of solving these cases. And what is the problem? Are you running short of the staff? Are you under capacitated, or what is the problem that your pace is so slow? Even on CPTD, the pace is slow. You agree that it's slow, and I just want, what is your problem? The point is that you said we are noting it on safety at schools. You said we have it's just to note it, and under your noting you said you support no corporal punishment, of which we all support it. But now what do you think, what has been relevant? You spoke about producing a booklet. Will that be able to solve this problem that we are faced with, whereby learners and teachers are on hands up, is a war? Is it going to be able to be booklet? And have you ever talked to the procedures when a child has committed an unacceptable behavior at school? Those procedures, go and call your parents. Bring your parent after 14 days. Bring it. The exams are being written. The what? The child is out. It's not yet even 14 and 28 days and WhatsApp days. Do we find that those procedures, are they relevant? Because at the end, the child will be out of school. Not even the case being addressed. And lastly, question is another question. Do you, these cases that you say are unresolved, and you say probably the lack of, what is the problem actually? Why are these cases not resolved? Because when I look down you said they will, what is your comment at the end? How are you going to the percentage of signs? I will come back, but I don't want to waste your time because I want to go home also.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, and thank you, Chairperson. I wanted just the CEO's comment on the shortcomings that they have, and that the follow-up will be made. Why are they not done immediately after on outstanding or have been investigated and disciplinary hearings underway? All of them, 2017, all the outcome disciplinary underway, disciplinary investigated. But I would like to see when can you give us that so many teachers were found guilty and that was the sanction.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Honorable Machet.
Thank you, Chair. And also thank you to the state. I look at their representatives, the number is actually a very limited number that comes as compared to PPE, because it's not anyway, I think everyone is very happy with the report. The only thing that I wanted to find out is, the vacancies that you're talking about, okay, vacancies, and you say that you are intending to fill them. Have they been costed? Do you have a budget for them? And also, if you have actually advertised for those positions. Last time when we had a meeting with you, you mentioned that in January you're going to ask the teachers to do an affidavit at the police station, which basically is, to declare that I've never abused the child or anything like that. But now today you're talking about a clearance certificate, so which is the two different processes. I just wanted to maybe clarify this is what. So you've made a decision that you're going to clear the certificate and abandoning the affidavit because you just explained that. And also with regards to officers and problems that it has been mentioned. But what I'm interested in is the staffing of those officers. I know last time you mentioned that you will be utilizing officers within the department, so you won't be incurring the cost of renting. That's what you meant. I just want to find out, the staffing as well of those offices, if you do intend to expand further lines to provinces. That will costed as well, and do you have budget for it? Because your budget is very limited, so I'm kind of like, a bit worried with intentions of expanding, yet you don't have enough funds. And also if those offices would be accessible to the teachers when they need to. And also your mechanisms that you are putting in place to ensure that you basically strengthen the financial management of all those projects, just to make sure that they are well strengthened. And also, you receive an unqualified budget for funding. What are you going to do to ensure that you get a clean audit? You have a very small budget. So I would think, it's a tall order for the Department of Education to receive a clean audit. But for you, having a very small department with a very small budget, you're not buying furniture, you're not building schools, so it's difficult for you just to make sure that the teachers are registered. What plans do you have? Do you have a vision to say, next year when we're sitting here, you can train for the clean ones, and what steps that you are going to put in place to ensure that you achieve that? The other factor that we a bit of like to bring after what Bosha has mentioned is the practitioners. Not the practitioners, they are in some of them they're in the school environment. They are responsible for small learners as well. And yet I don't know of anybody that's registered. I mean they are working with learners as well. So like do you have ever engaged the department in terms of establishing what happens to those students? Are they going to fall under you? And I think, from my understanding, is that eventually they will have to be falling under Department of Education, which would make sense. Because, you know, eventually their place of learning has to be in school. And therefore, you have to come in that case. It takes very long to resolve cases. If you can just break it down for me, what is it that you do? Okay, if something happens in a local school, transgression happens, whichever way, the learner or you know or the teacher. What's the steps that have been taken? You know, like if you can just maybe come up with a breakdown. And also, if the school that we're going to is not worth, once we found out in that school that they have some kind of a committee within the school that also has the component of SUP, that deals with transgression within, you know, at that level, without having to burden you with each and every a case. So what have you done to ensure, I mean, I should ask DPE that as well, to say, you know, what have they done to ensure that those kind of committee, they exist in the school to be able to, if there's a case, that emanates in schools, that like when there are some structures without really, you know, like involving faith. I mean, the other one is just about the fact that a teacher made an advance to a learner. Does a case like that have to end up with you? Because for me, it just doesn't make sense. I mean, you have to handle those kind of things. And the 50% on salary that my colleague mentioned, I don't think it's really not that bad because VBE spends 90% of their budget on salary. So I was just not okay, I think that's about it. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Of course, Ms.
King. I'm also on your senior management position. But mine is just basically to ask how far are you with the job evaluation processes in order to fill these posts. Also, I needed to find out these four vacant posts. Are they funded vacant posts? Because I'm just thinking if it's funded vacant posts, to fill them is easy. And then, Faith, I see you talking about your vacant system, and I do understand your challenges that you have with it. But coming from a science background, I would like to find out, have you ever considered having a memorandum of understanding with SEPS itself and the Department of Justice on how to link your IT system in order to pick it up quicker? It will just minimize the process since we are moving into a digital era. And then being an educator myself for 15 years and also a SAFE member, slide 57, you were talking about school violence. The one thing that I would love you to add in there is parent on teacher violence, because that is also increasing in as much as learner on teacher violence. Thanks.
Thank you. So we can see the interest.
I'm appreciating the interest from Honorable King. I can see
why. I love teachers.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. CEO and your colleagues, thank you for the presentation. I also want to join my colleagues in appreciating the efforts that you have taken to make sure that you correct, you know, that perception that was there about your institution. I remember at one point, Chairperson, this was a return. And, you know, we really appreciate that we have moved and we hope that we maintain, you know, that good performance going forward. So I just want to raise a few questions because the most of the questions were raised already. Chairperson, I have noticed that there is an improvement in terms of registration for the TPGs. There is an improvement. Even the target that you have set for yourself, you only need this by about 7.5%. And, you know, I'm particularly inspired by the fact that the self-initiated registration is also on the rise. So I just wanted to check, like, how did you turn the situation around? Because at some point, and then even if you, like, you have categorized them into type 1, 2, and 3 registrations, so you look at all three registrations, there is an improvement in all of them, it's not only at level 1. So I wanted to know, how did you turn the situation around so that it's able to reflect such a good improvement? The other point, Chairperson, is on the issue of registration of teachers. Each teacher is required to be registered with your organization for them to practice. So I want to check, because for me, CPD is very critical, not only in education, but in any other profession that is there. And in some professions, you find that if you are not participating on such programs, they deregister you. So I just want to check with you whether you have really considered, you know, linking the two, because, you know, like, I suppose that if those two things can be linked, they will make an impact. There will be a very reasonable improvement, because I might be wrong. It might be that, and you can correct me also, say, people take it as a voluntary exercise. There is no consequence for not participating. So I think maybe if we can add a little bit of teeth, you know, and a thing, you know, in that space, it will be able to encourage a lot of teachers, much to the advantage of the department. Because most of the time, you look, even when we talk to DBE, DBE was telling us that the diagnostic tests, which are part of change that has to happen, you know, but they are not happening. And I think that if teachers were participating in CPD, they will be able to compensate for the loss that is, you know, on the other side. So it's not only a question, but it's also a proposal that we must look into that aspect of tying them together. Chairperson, I don't want to go far, I was just interested on that. But maybe the last question is the issue of, like, when you register, like you have said that you are also capturing them once they are sent to study. Which level? Or immediately as you register at university, you already qualify to be in the, to have preliminary membership, or when you are at level 2, maybe if you can explain for us that part. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you. For me, let me write on what the Honorable Godo has just raised. The issue of deregistering is there with you saying 3 years ago. Have you applied? Because for me, I will even go further as to say teachers need to register for this program of continual teacher development with you, looking at the programs that are being offered, because you say you only manage it. But my worry is there are so many other trainings.
other developmental programs that are taking place at schools. How, for us to contain this thing, how do we make sure that whatever, definitely there are those programs that are not accredited, that are not with, accredited with you, but they do take part, they do take place at school. How do we manage the whole thing? Because really, I can assure you, very few educators are not being developed. But the fact of the matter is that they might not be developed on the programs that are in your program. So how do we manage all this thing? When we talk of teacher development, whether from the union, from the publishers, from who, how do we make sure that they are in one pot so that we can be able to manage this? And that will even lead it to easier for you to go through these 3 years like yesterday, the teacher is not registered and what is that can be done. Secondly, on the issue of cases, there are so many cases that are not being reported. Due to so many reasons. The principals can be bad not to do this, But for me, I think we must reach a point where there can be sort of a sanction even to a school that has been found not to have registered. Because there are so many not to have reported these cases. I can assure you the number of cases that I hear, it's a pity because we are even talking of your manpower. The day we can say each and every case where a child's right has been violated, it means you won't sleep. Your offices would be flooded like, I don't know what to say. But really, how do we find a mechanism as to say, how do we make sure that these cases are being reported? Because so many of our learners are being exploited at school. I was interested on these cases where you say there's even violence and abuse from teacher to teacher. Do you administer those cases too? Or you are only interested in a teacher to a learner? But the ones on teacher to teacher, really, I wish to see even some of the examples of as to say what is it that you have done and what kind of cases are those? Again, with the two provinces where you are visible, where you have offices, I wish you can share with the committee as to say what is the positive, what are the good stories that you can tell in those provinces where there are offices vis-a-vis where they are not. Looking at the number of cases that are still outstanding, is there a link as to say in these provinces where we've established your offices, then that things are becoming even easier, even there, when it comes to registration, things are flowing in those offices, so that we can compare the two as to say, for a long time we didn't have these offices, now they are there. Is there any positive outcome that you find out of that? Thank you very much again, Faith. That for the first time we have got the professional standards gazetted in the country. We know it's your efforts. We are very happy about that. We commend you again for what we have done. No, let me stop there for now. Oh, lastly, what do we have in mind? We are going even to this meeting that you are even saying on Friday. Just to, what do you have in mind when you talk of positive discipline? What are the things that might come in? Because really, when it comes to the issue of discipline, our teachers are faced with a lot of problems. And we are saying not only the teachers vis-a-vis learners, but even the behavior of the teachers themselves can provoke these learners. So when we talk of this positive discipline, that's to say how the teacher has ever himself should behave, and what is there in mind? Because surely you are not going to the conference or the meeting without empty-handed, Surely you have got some sort of advice to say these are the things the discussions will be around that. Because it's one thing that you are saying it's very important to do. The very last one, when we strike the teacher off the road, we have seen this can be struck.
Honorable Machesa Susogwe Roy, but we'll see Honorable Machesi Esefashe FGB some way. Sometimes you cannot even blame them because she has been struck off the road, but there is nothing that they know, that, you know. Meaning to say, how do we, I don't want to use name and shame, but how do we expose such criminals? They're criminals anyway, you know. So that we guard against the very same culprit appearing in another province, in another school, you know, being employed in whatever way that he or she can be employed. Thank you.
Let me work from start from where you ended. The issue of track of we requested to remember last time in this committee that council took a legal opinion on this matter. And one of the things was that we cannot publish them directly on our website because it's not in our act. And therefore we needed to amend our act. So we sent the amendment to the DELA process. Unfortunately, that process is taking a very long time because the statement is like you in there for 2 minutes submission. There are two sometimes that process is completed. We'd not be able to know whether that has been accepted in the amendment or not. So it's been taken care of. The issue around positive discipline and also restorative discipline is more about self-introspection as a licensed teacher in terms of how do I deal with my own anger management, how do I deal with the positive way of disciplining instead of also from ourselves in terms of the code, not focus on the do's and don'ts, but focus more on ethical considerations, ethical reasoning, philosophical issues. So we do have a number of endorsed programs for that we can say to the teaching profession, to the department and providers, if we are moving in terms of this particular direction, these are the programs that you can begin to tap on in terms of assisting the teacher. And also just to link that to there was another question by in terms of involving other, what does it mean in terms of involving other partners with SAPS, DSP, etc. When you work with SAPS, you're thinking about the dating SAP policy errors versus the academic. The reason why we wanted an affidavit is that the Department of Justice and Constitutional Development at the moment, in the absence of the register being functional, they are saying, in addition to whatever you do, request an affidavit. So that by the time the system is up and running, we can submit to them and say, these are the people who declared that they do not have anything. Should they find that they lied under oath, then the criminal justice system will take it. But in addition, we're still going to apply SAPS clearance. Those two. So there was also a question around what is it that will be in the police clearance. We don't have authority over that because it's a sub that determines what it is that they want from you. When they match, in fact, they also want the fingerprint. That's another thing that you cannot do our the fingerprint must be the hand is being administered by them. So when they take fingerprints, they will check it against their criminal record center, and on the basis of that, they will give you a certificate to say you are cleared or not. But what we do from the office to link up with the assistant, we are able to whether what you submitted is fraudulent or not. Because there's a number on top, we punch it in our system before we give you. That's why I'm saying we are testing with the foreign educators. And there's about 15 or 10 that we said that because they were prejudiced. Unless you test against that system, you're still going to have prejudiced ones coming from them. We cannot have electronic systems because all the registers that I'm thinking about are not automated. They're not transmitted, it's manual systems. Even if when the Department of Justice is ready, we still have to do manual. Where with justice they want fingerprints, they don't want electronic.
You know, I'm a little bit concerned about, it sounds like it's, now you have an affidavit that you have to get, you have to apply for a police clearance, and then you have also the register that will basically, okay, be the one that determines if you're committed. I mean, you have three processes now that are going to be doing almost the same thing. So, isn't the affidavit, because the affidavit should have some guidelines on its own, if we had that, because that is under oath, whereby we say, I, Nonsa Machesi, I've never assaulted, abused anyone, have not been fired. And that should be given those guidelines to say, okay, this is the kind of affidavit that we're looking for when it comes to this issue, please, this, so that we have them declare that they haven't done that. So, because also the police clearance, after the problem is that, because like, you know, will the police clearance also have, if somebody is committing themselves, it's different than having a police clearance that will come back and say yes, and then omitting something or aching something that is not there. So I just want to find out why are we doing double work. Sounds like it.
That's your head.
You know, but it's a prostitute.
Yes.
I mean,
yes.
If you're old.
Okay.
It's up to a person because I have an experience of these fingerprints, and they are quicker in our days. They take hours to give you the results of your finger, and then they detect your crime, whether it's pending or you did it, and then so on, then they are more secure than having an affidavit that when are you going to get your own screening instruments that you are going to use. After years, when you get your own screening instrument, then the person has been enjoying the employment that is illegal with the department. For me, I take it as a double assurance. Thank you.
CEO?
Yeah, okay. I think it links to the same question that Honorable Boshoff was asking earlier on, to say, why did we take so long not doing all of them? So you are saying maybe we should be focusing on one this?
No, even if it's one or the other.
Let me tell you what is the legal opinion.
Let us avoid that dialogue moving forward so that we can come to the end of the process. Otherwise,
the three registers have got different, they serve different people. The justice one has got convicted people on sexual harassment or sexual abuse, whatever. Yes. If you, for example, we try you off, you are not convicted. You won't be in that list. You can get away with it. But we've got an obligation in terms of the sexual criminal offense, sexual related matters to report the 24 to SAP, so that on the side of SAP, they can continue with the conviction. Whether they do it or not, it is one up to us as long as we protect. Now, from the Child Protection Register, it determines unsuitability to work with children. It can be conviction, it can be a person who is not convicted. So that will be your sexual abuse, your physical assault, all those kind of things that will make you not suitable to work with children.
Yeah.
You get the difference. Then first will be all the criminal, any criminal, whether you were drinking and driving, you were convicted of particular thing or not. So that's the difference between the three. So I think what's the basis of that?
Before you close on the issue, honorable. For sure.
Thank you, Chair. This is not directed to the CEO, it's actually directed to us as a committee. Would it then not be advisable that we, as a matter of urgency, sit with our stakeholders like Justice and Sets to see if we... Because we need to ensure that these registers are maintained. And everything's being done from FACES side. And they can't take it further because there's a gap somewhere. I'm just asking.
And social development, yeah. And just to add on that, meanwhile, yes, I'm coming to you. Meanwhile, then that has not happened. You said the employer has got an access. So for me, it calls for your relationship. EDBE is an employer. How are you working with the employer then, if ever you have these cases, you know? Because that relationship will help, will assist a lot, and as to say, here you are, say, department, you are the key there. That working relationship, oh yeah, please. Because it will, we can't be, you can't be held at ransom just because you cannot address, whereas you are part of the, you are not part of the, but, we are part of the system, the department is there, can access. So what is the problem then? Up until we do all these things where you have the direct access, but let us see your relationship with the department. Maybe before I come to you saying, DBE, can you come in? Okay. Then I will come to President. I will always call you President, even if you are not here on the table of the President. Then I will come to the President.
No, thank you.
And
on the mic.
Oh, yes. For him to be recorded, what he
would
say.
And I didn't introduce myself earlier.
We know you.
I was out from DBE. Okay. Now, I just wanted to indicate, Chair, that remember, discipline is a dual responsibility in the sense that says deals with disciplinary issues that relate to infringement to its code of professional ethics. But then from the DBE point of view, we also have the Employment of Educators Act, particularly your sections 17 and 18 respectively, whereby if an educator misconducts him or herself, they can be liable for disciplinary action in terms of those two sections. Now, what we are trying to do, which has been a gap in the system, has been the issue of reporting, to say that if, for an example, a provincial education department as an employer, invokes disciplinary measures against an educator, there's a requirement that states need to be aware that there's a particular educator who has infringed and then who is being disciplined by the department. So there has been gaps in the sense that such reporting has not been consistent. It is for that reason that we are signing that protocol with SAIS that will deal with a whole host of issues relating to the relationship between DBE and SAIS. It will also address issues of provincial departments who employ personnel that have been struck off the roll. It will also address issues of departments that employ, you know, teachers that are not things registered. So it will cover a whole range of areas, so that the synergy between what DBE is doing as well as provinces on one hand and what SAIS is doing. So we believe that that protocol will go a long way towards closing some of the loopholes that have been bedeviling the system. Thank you.
We want to follow up on the department.
Yes, please, if I may, Chair. If we are going to take the protocol to the provincial level, then we also need to take it a step further to the school, because a school is also an employer, and we invariably find that principals also tend to sweep cases under carpet. So how are we going to address that issue? If you could just take it a step further. Thank you, Chair.
And why are you taking that step further? I wanted to clarify this, just to say a school is an employer, because it will go by, it will go on to...
Yes,
the,
well.
Yeah, even to the fact that a school can the principal expel, or, you know, is a school an employer? I want you to clarify that.
Okay. No, no, Chairperson, the employer is the school governing body.
Or the SDB.
The SDB is the employer. So one of the things that, of course, we're dealing with, and it's not only the issue of SDBs as employers, it's also the issue of the private schools, because while private schools are legal personas, but when it comes to issues of protection of children, as a department, we do have a responsibility there. And because we are also responsible for registering these private schools, it will be our responsibility to ensure that they become compliant when it comes to putting measures in place to ensure that they do the necessary reporting as per legislation. So these are some of the issues that we will deal with to ensure that our governing bodies are on board. If a principal sweeps anything under the carpet or is supposed to report an act of misconduct or to act against it and does not do so, that in itself constitutes misconduct. And as the provincial department, as employer, we are under obligation to act against it.
Another follow-up.
We're
sleeping here today.
Yeah, no.
So for now, we've got to
check.
Maybe from statement, when you respond to the question, like there are instances where teachers are found at fault at school, but instead of them being dealt with, the district or the circuit will choose to transfer them. How has to another school or to the circuit for them to prove? They say they pack them there. How has this impacted your... Are there such cases that you have recorded? And how has it impacted on your activities, particularly around that issue that you are dealing with? Thank you.
No, thanks, honorable members, colleagues from the DBE. I'm aware we have desire to sleep here. But my humble request was that wouldn't it have been better to allow the CEO to respond to the 32, 33 questions that you have made, and then the CFO can make follow-ups, and if we want to add, we'll be at liberty to do so. And if there are follow-up questions, they can be noted, and you'd realize that in some instances you'd have a specific issue, especially the one at table now, that might take us an extra time. But the entire questions that were posed would have been dealt with. My humble request.
In as much as I agree with you, President, but it also helps because at the end of the day, when you finish with your 32, there will be no follow-up. So in whatever way, but we'll definitely give you all a chance to. But really, with these spending issues, where we want to make sure that we have exhausted these issues, sometimes it's nice to get in direct as the response is coming. But we fully take your request. See you all.
Thanks, Chair. And I think that you can see the partner in the protocol because we are almost done with the protocol that the Rapid was talking about. Just to also add on what he said, from our side, we already have two cases where we charge the principal that were refusing to cooperate or they needed the cases. So council has taken that decision that we need to move in that particular direction. The provincial offices, I think we are really seeing progress, especially with the KZN one, because we've got too many educators in KZN, and the provincial office in KZN is working, is very busy around the clock, especially with regard to the registration issue. So they are handling very high volumes, and as such, we are also looking at to what extent can we assist in terms of dealing with the volumes that they are getting. And we are hoping as we move into other provinces, we'll also be able to see more or less the same. The issue of, you talked about deregistration earlier on, and we want to say from our own conceptualization, we're talking in line with the NDP recertification. So that we are on the same page. So we're saying we are registering you, we're certifying you, but we need to recertify you. So as we recertify, the issue of CCTV system should be one of the areas where we agree. I just want to where we agree that we need to certify the requirements of getting that recertification. And I didn't want to go through it thoroughly, but you can see the initial thinking already is there. So say through the CCTV system year 1, year 2, year 3, then you'll be recertified on the basis of certifying those. From the National Policy Framework on Teacher Education, when it was launched, it was clear that we need to implement for the first 6 years. It's in the policy. Then learn from the processes. But after 6 years, council must come back and take a decision to say how do we deal with the issue of recertification and going forward. So we are in our fifth year, we are finalizing, hence we are preparing, conceptualizing to say, and we are consulting the stakeholders as well to say we are moving towards that direction. Very soon council will pronounce in terms of this particular area. And the fact that you are coming back on the 23rd, we will be able to deal with these issues thoroughly. So how, from initial teacher education until the teachers retire, how are all these issues coming together with the standard higher education and all that? And linked to that, Honorable Mokoto, we are currently registering student teachers from third, fourth year. But with our new teacher professionalization process, we want to start from year one. And I think again, when you come back on the 23rd, we'll be able to give you thorough explanation in terms of how we are intending to do that particular process. We turn the whole issue of the CPTD around. If you don't deal with the provinces that have got too many educators, for example, your figures and Limpopo and Eastern Cape, the whole system suffers. So we managed to deal with this two provinces in particular, Limpopo and KZN, in terms of going to their AMI section and working collaboratively with them, and also getting data and be able to sign up as many educators as possible. And that is why you can see from the information that you have currently that we are almost done with the sign up. We are at 333,000. I mean, for 450 plus in teachers, we are getting there, and that has stressed us a lot. Honourable Matisa, you asked the issue of the ECD, you talked about the practitioners, and I want to focus on ECD and also either AUT adult education and training, and also your community education and training. Currently, we are registering from Grade Act because we are dealing with the schooling sector. But you know that the cabinet decision of ECD moving your zero to moving to basic. Now, there's a discussion between PLF, ECD, and the partners to say how do we professionalize the other sector outside the Grid Act. If basic education is taking over ECD, it means from this point of view, we need to find a way of professionalizing that sector. And I think when they come on board, we'll be able to begin a discussion in terms of how to begin. We can't isolate them because we are outside. The issue of mechanisms for foreseen audit, one of the things out of the job evaluation process, we now going to have a planning MNP and reporting division. Currently we don't have. So if we have that division, it's the one that will be able to monitor across the reporting, the planning, the MNP, and how do they relate together so that we have clean quarterly reports, because it starts there. If your quarterly reports are not clean, from a financial and performance point of view, you can't perform a miracle at the end of the financial year. So that unit is supposed to be assisting all of us in terms of making sure that we track all those things, but also building capacity within the system. And also, if we have on board well-capacitated senior managers that will be coming on board, that will be able to do that. And just talking about senior managers, honorable team, we do have a budget, yes, for those vacancies. The job evaluation process has been completed. All the posts have been advertised that were missing. And we are hoping in the next coming 2 to 3 weeks, we should be able to do with the interviews and finalize the process. So by the end of the year, those people should be on board. They may start at the beginning of the year, but the entire recruitment and selection process will be done at that time. And yes, honorable matches, the relationship has been constant, and I think the people will be able to give you the cost as a research team. Okay, moving to the basic issues, I think we've dealt with them. One of the things that we are dealing with, honorable Barton, especially in the team that is dealing with the summit on school-based violence, was to have an intergovernmental process. We have staff, we have DSD, which will be responsible for the social aspects of learners and also teachers. We do have the Department of Justice, because of the whole issue of Child Justice Act. Because there's a perception that we allow these children to do whatever they do and they get away with murder because of the Child Justice Act. So that particular justice is coming, and you also have the National Prosecuting Authority, because for the court, this is the court, when we arrest and all that, they need to come on board. And our fellow states, all teacher unions and everybody. So it's a sort of a multi-stakeholder, intergovernmental kind of a grouping that we'll be able to deal with that. Again, there was also an issue on page 25 of the annual report. I think Honorable Boshoff, we were talking about the slipping and to say corporal punishment is corporal punishment. Yes, most of those cases are already coming from the provincial education department with vaccines. So the issue of double jeopardy is something that we're also looking at, but we're giving them advisory letters. Should they continue, then the situation will change. We don't close the letter, we keep it open in case there's another, the teacher is repeating the same question again, then it will be a different lesson. And that's the way it needs to track off, if they repeat. It's not that you're looking at it like it doesn't matter. The reporting you are correct by all provinces. Currently we're getting the majority of cases from Western Cape, from KZN and Gauteng. I know Limpopo is coming on board. But the protocol that Councillor Ravuta is talking about will be able to deal with that issue. It's definitely going to assist in terms of making sure that all the provinces are reporting. The 52% budget, salary budget, I think it's the CFO will address it in the later stage. The 30,430 untouched forms, provinces such as KZN in particular, were not warming up to electronic way of doing things. Digital system as well as manual aspect and as well as electronic. So because of the electronic part, they send the form 2-3 weeks before the end of financial year. And while they came in during the financial year, we can't count them because they were not captured. If they are not captured, it means there won't be any verification from an audit point of view. So that is why you end up having them lying there and not being part of the capture. CCTV consequence management, I think I've shown you in terms of what we are planning. The 24 names that we submitted to the DSC have been in contact with the registrar that is dealing with this and has acknowledged that he has received them and will be able to extend that. One of the things that DSC is raising, even if we can check against their register on Part B in terms of unsuitability to be practicing educators. The fact remains both ourselves and the nine employers and BDE are not, were not for quite some time, not feeding parties. Therefore, even if you search, you won't find educators because no one was feeding. But we are starting that process of feeding Part A of the register so that you can have also so I'm hoping as we go along we'll begin to deal with that. The carryover of cases, I think in our presentation, generally one of the things really that has been contributing to that, which you raised sharply I think last year, was the issue of capacity. But I think Council has taken some reflection, they've done job evaluation, and out of that we've got additional 5 posts that have been created, and they are part of what Honorable King raised of area on. They've been advertised, they will be filled just in the next coming 2-3 weeks. So that we have, in addition to what we have, additional 5 tables, but strengthened through the retired educators, ad hoc kind of teams that will be able to ask them in terms of your implementation. And also, Honorable Marchese, you asked the steps. One of the things you submit a case to say is we acknowledge, but then before we can also deal with the disciplinary hearing, we need to deal with investigation. So there's a team of investigators that will go out to check both the accused and also the complainant. Get the facts, come back to counsel, take the whole issue to the ethics committee. The ethics committee will say yes, on the basis of the preliminary evidence, you can charge or not charge. If we charge, we continue, then the disciplinary hearing process will take place. Depending on the availability, depending on cooperation of the witnesses, it can take 2 months to 3. But most of the time, especially the sexual harassment cases, you have an issue of you can find the witness today to say in 2 days, 3 days time you will be coming to testify. But overnight, the teacher will write, give the parents the letter or whoever, and then you come to the case, the letter will start saying, I'm not coming.
Mm.
It's about poverty, or it's about the issue of culture to say, we pay something to the family, then we are not covering. So it has got a whole lot of dynamics that will take you from here to before you can even come to a
conclusion.
So then it will go back to council for council to take a decision on the basis of what the panelists are submitting, whether you've checked all the angles and take a decision on the sanction and the finalization. But you will never stop a process of not having carryover. We are fighting to reduce them. Because if you get a case in February, you are likely not to complete the whole process that I've outlined. I think you'll continue to have that, but I think when the committee is correct, let's reduce the number of carryovers that we have.
Yeah, I think let me hand over to the senior managers on COO, Honorable Bosho, which is part of the senior managers. It has been advertised and will be feeling it very soon. And we are taking note of the hotline that you are proposing. We're looking to meet and see to what an extent can we expect in our program.
Thank you.
No, thanks. The first question was about the surplus, which was repeating on our presentation. Once you have surplus, it changes your financial position completely. That surplus, part was planned towards the provincial offices, which we had a reserve account, because we never had cash one time to start these provincial offices. We had to plan a reserve amount on annual basis so that we're able to make a move. So we encountered the delays in terms of that process of acquiring the provincial offices. Let me same time answer that because I'll come straight to the supply. There was an issue about renting or getting space from the provincial offices. That was the first option, which sounded to be cheaper, but it was not cheap as that, because we wrote letters to this provincial department. Some of them we met with them. None of them ever responded to our letters, except the few that we managed to see. And the ones we saw, the processes are complicated as an outsider to get a space in government. There is public works national involved. There is a public works provincial. So to move in terms of that communication, it is very difficult. We couldn't succeed, and it was going to take a council longer than when the council straight away invests in its own properties, which they will never go away. Those are assets which will keep the value as long as we maintain them. So the council has to consider the circumstances around that and took a decision that we rather acquire our own buildings, because getting them from the government, it will take longer because of the processes involved. So in terms of the surplus care, the decision was taken to increase the levies with effect from November. But the process of implementation took a little bit longer, whereby the implementation happened in March, and then it had a little positive effect. At that time, we were already finishing the financial year. There was nothing we could do with that money. Anyway, as part of, one of the intentions in the increasing of the levy was to boost the organizational capacity, as well as creating the contact points in the provinces. So therefore, we had that surplus, which now the intention is still part of the original idea of concept. The next question, which is the 52% budget bill, a salary bill, takes the service organization. For us to deliver service, we need to have human capital. The Honorable, in another point, raised the issue of understanding what is it, which is a reality. So the moment we have... So, therefore, for us to increase the capacity, we have to increase the salary bill. And arising from the job evaluation as well, we increase the number of positions. I'm not so sure of the number, but it's above 20. They go close to 30 positions, which will have an effect on the budget, and the council has budgeted for that. Same time, with the provincial contact point, we have budgeted even now as we speak for the staff complements to ensure that the services are carried out immediately. We are ready. Why a delay on provincial notice? I think I indicated is those difficulties. And it becomes longer. We have a process of planning, then it comes to bidding processes. After bidding processes, we'll go to, if you find it obvious, most of the buildings in there, if you won't find them suiting our needs, we'll have to do some revamp a little bit to adjust them to meet our requirements. But the bidding process is on, the adjudications are going on now as we speak. Next week there will be visiting of those potential ones to complete the assessment, which will lead to the purchase. In terms of the internal control improvement, the CEO answered it. What we say is reviewed its own operation or its own capacity in 2007-2008, which now is almost more than 10 years. Which it responded to the gap in terms of the capacity by instituting a job evaluation which was concluded and gave rise to the positions that we are talking about. So part of our deficiency was that capacity within divisions, which the council has addressed now. It had addressed, it was becoming a serious issue whereby things which were supposed to be finished on time wouldn't be finished on time. People had to go an extra mile from January to December to make sure that we get up to date, which was complicated. Sometimes towards the closure of the booth month end, you find that people work until midnight, which was not healthy and was not good for the council. Then it will lead to errors which you will discover when you are led, but if you are under pressure, you cannot see your own error. There was an issue, CEO, about the provincial offices to say, what about the regions, what about the districts? With the current capacity and what states can afford, is that we start from the provincial level. Whereas we can see there is a need. So what we did, because provinces define terms of sizes, we do have representatives in provinces who assist in ensuring that the services of states is taken care of. They will coordinate that with the provincial office which they have. But as time moves on, I think the council will continue assessing the situation. The cost of positions, CEO answered that. So, thanks. The strengthening of financial management, which, what is it that we're going to do? we understand the issue of understanding which has been addressed. We are reviewing the business controls of the entire organization to ensure that some of these new units are able to play their role. And the fact that things has grown for a long time, we currently, as we speak, we are busy reviewing our controls, our business rules, to ensure that we manage and minimize the errors that may take place.
Thanks, Chef. Allow me to just make a few additions. One among them is what happens to a teacher who is struck off the roll to make sure that this person doesn't escape. What do you do as states once the teacher is struck off the roll? To my understanding, if you go into our website, you should be taken where to a situation wherein you can punch the ID of that educator. Whether you are an independent school or so, as long as you are aware that you want to verify whether this person is not a deregistered person. Once you punch the ID of that person, it will tell you that this person is struck off the roll, and therefore you're not supposed to employ those people. So how would schools know about that? Together with DBE, we can make sure that in terms of advocacy, we're able to cascade the information down and make sure that it reaches all schools so that transgressions are avoided. Now, you have requested for how far are you with the provincial presence? I know that we have in two provinces, maybe three will come in soon. But to make sure that the ethics is actually advocated. When you have either conferences, workshops, and so on throughout the country, SAIT is often invited. And it has a section, a committee for advocacy. So through their communications manager and other departments, the reason why even the reporting of cases is sort of increasing is because work is being done. Not just for, through conferences, through social media, through radios, and so on. Now, I'm not sure how many unregistered educators we have. I'm sure a follow-up can be made. You have also requested for positive discipline. What do we mean? That's how far we could add. I'm sure they'll be able to come back to that so that we're trying to answer many of the questions that you have posed. Thank you.
Before I come to you, Honorable Bishop, just for interest sake, let's say we are talking on of the cases where learners are being, their rights are being violated, abused, or whatever. In that, that's why I'm saying just for interest sake, most of the time, once you say that the learner has been abused and all that, what comes to my mind and to many others is that, oh, these men have abused our learner. Mm-hmm. That's a fact. Mm-hmm. Oh, so they're repeating anything to the matter. That's what will come. I'm just interested on the nature, you know, of these cases.
whether our perception, I'm just looking at the changes, the way things are changing, the times that you are in, you know. What is it that you are dealing with here?
Thank you very much, Chair. What are we going to do with the SGB appointments, teachers, if they transgress? Because I don't think SAFE has got the mandate to intervene or to take the case further. Who is going to take the first step to ensure that SGB appointees follow the same steps or suits as a teacher that's been appointed by the department?
Can I take
Basso? I wanted to say I support your question because I have such a case where the student teacher is.
Okay, because I wanted us to wrap up on the follow up.
Yeah.
Let's take it back to you, CEO.
Yes, thank you. That's the one that's currently, from our data, we have plus minus 6,000 practicing unregistered. But we have a specialized project with 6,000 plus. Yes. We drew that data from the money that we received from on a monthly basis from National Treasury. So what we've done, we've taken the databases and sent them to the provincial head of department, because they are violating the act. So say you shouldn't even be paying this people or employing this people. But you're also writing to the individuals themselves and give them time to say within this particular period, you should have registered this thing. That's the first one. The second one that you raised, the trends that we are beginning to see, yes, generally your 97%, 98% is male educators on female learners. But then we are beginning to see a trend of about 2% on female teachers on younger male learners. But even more interestingly, you know the Northern Cape case of a female educator who penetrated a young girl with a vibrator. And West threatened her to say, if you tell your parents, I'm going to cut the learner with 80 times to the razor blade in order not to talk. So those are coming. Those threats are coming slowly.
Yes.
Those issues. So I was even trying to show you, because every time when people talk about this, I normally show them the real thing. I mean, like this female teacher took these three young boys in the name of giving them one-on-one lesson on math, and then raped them in front of each other, lined them up, and read. So you, the stories are horrible. If you can see what is in that. So these are the kind of, I think I've got presentation for all these things. If I don't presentation for all these things. So that's where we are.
No,
those are side effects. Just like the ones that we have read on the mutual report. A step father has raped a 10-year-old 900 times. It's something that you just cannot imagine. How would it happen?
Okay. And the last one says, yeah, these are some of the things that when you really do, that is why we just need a research on some of the factors that are really these teachers to be doing some of these kind of issues. The STD, we do have jurisdiction, honorable master, yes. We register every educator in this country, whether they are employed in terms of Section 3 of the State Act,
is that mandate to register whether you are employed in terms of the EEA, SASA, your FET then CJS now, and also your CET, which is your other education and trade community, education and training.
Can I just ask a follow up on that, Chair? If that is the case, would you be able to give us a report on how many SGB appointees are guilty of any offence in comparison with provincially appointed teachers?
I will check if it's possible, because it depends on how do we collect data as well. But we'll check.
If it is possible. No, thank you very much, Faith.
We know we're still going to be engaging you very soon, where we'll be having more of these discussions, but on your annual performance, really, as we commended you when you started, we are still there. Thank you very much for the good work that we're seeing of late, and we wish you can keep this momentum and even improve on what you are doing. Thank you ever so much. Honourable members, next week, on Tuesday, yes, we'll be meeting NECT to brief us on their program, because it's one of the, I cannot call them entities, but it's, we are giving them money to perform. So they must come and report so that when we finalize our report, they are part of work, it's part of our report. But also, ELF, if you remember, they no more report to us, but the CEO of ERFC has just called me last week with a lot of developments. I remember even you started the term with them, but a lot of developments when it comes to the issues of chamber, of which they would love even to come and share with us. So on Wednesday, we have scheduled the ERFC just to come on to brief us on what are the new agreements that they've come up with at the level of the chamber with the unions and so forth. That have got it. The direct hearing on how we continue their work. So those will be the two, and we hope even on Tuesday the team will have started working on the bigger part of the report, where as early as next week we'll be starting to look at the report. It will make it easier for us to adopt it as early as we can, and we'll start looking at those committees. We'll still be busy and things as late next week, but fortunately next week no, we won't have these long periods as we expect. Thank you very much, honourable members, and the bulk of the job now is left to you, Mr. Gekhan and Mr. Brown. We always see you when it comes to that, but we trust you do a wonderful job. Thank you so much, honourable members. Thank you very much. Thank you all. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Just on the hour.
No, share. When you know what you want to do, just.